Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. Welcome to another edition of Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Hope everybody's doing great. I hope everybody enjoyed the past weekend fights. They're on Showtime, ESPN, and even on HBO. We had a lot of good fights starting up the whole week past week, starting from Friday. You know, ESPN didn't let us down from Javier Fortuna knocking out Evans in a fashion, man. I don't think a lot of us were anticipating. I didn't think he was going to go out that quick. I didn't think he was going to come out that hard. Javier just jumping on him and making a huge statement. Gabriel, I mean, how surprised were you?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. I guess you're still that surprised.
I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. What are you talking about, Dave? We got my lead-in introduction. I'm sorry I'm late to the show.
Oh, that's it. Penalty fee right there.
You know, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm talking about Fortuna being able to take out Evans so fast. I mean, the first round, he came out hard. He came out ready. He came out to make a statement. He basically was telling everybody, I'm the guy you need to keep an eye out for.
Dude, that was ridiculous. I mean, I think it was a matter of if he just caught a good one, you know, people get caught. I don't think Evans is done. He probably doesn't even remember what the hell happened. But I think the thing still showed that it's just that little blank. Even though Fortuna 1 is a great finisher, that's an art unto itself. He got good spacing. He went downstairs, came upstairs. He made sure to finish. He gets a little... where all weaknesses are with somebody that's not buzzed out of their mind the way Yandel Evans was. But, dude, I thought the power was real before. We saw it with Derek Wilson. We saw it in the fight before. That was the one that I first saw him. I forget the guy's name. It was more of an opponent. But this kid has had about four or five fights the last year or so. He's the real deal. I mean, I was looking at him in the gym when I was visiting up there to see Sergio Martinez. He was part of the team that was working out. I can see Bronner again in person, but this is a big kid. I think he is bigger than or smaller than Bronner. I'm not sure. Bronner may have grown, but she haven't seemed to indicate to me that the kid had a growth spurt. So he might be bigger than the listed 5'5 or 5'7, I think that he's at. He might be like a 5'8 now. But Fortuna versus Bronner would be an interesting fight, man. We'd find out he's got a chin, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. I mean, we definitely know that he's got power. We definitely know that he's going to come out aggressive and he's going to use his power and his speed. And if you allow him, he's gonna overwhelm you. We got a good show for everybody tonight. We got some boxing here to talk about from the past weekend. But we got a roundtable for the Mayweather and Cotto. We got a lot of well-known trainers and even a big fighter that a lot of us have loved throughout his whole career. We got Glenn Johnson, Barry Hunter, the trainer of Lamont. Of Lamont Peterson, who's facing Amir Khan. I got stuck there on my thought for a moment. Ray Woods, the father of Diego Corrales, who's now training Guy Robbs. We also got Jose Benavides Sr., who is the trainer and father of Jose Benavides Jr., the prospect for Top Rank. Then we got the head trainer, Joel Diaz, who always comes on the show and Leaving the Ring, who's training Timothy Bradley, getting him prepared for his June upcoming fight with Manny Pacquiao. So we got a stacked show here for everybody on Leaving the Ring. Our phone lines are going to be open for a few minutes, but as soon as 5:15, we're going to have Glenn Johnson, light heavyweight ex-world champion, who's faced some of the best fighters in the world in his division, from super middleweight to light heavyweight. So phone number is going to be 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya, but you got to get past the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. So anyways, Salak, man, you know, I keep telling everybody he's a prospect. He's a prospect, and I'd get people upset. Really upset, saying, no, he's not. He's a contender. He's ready in line to face some of the best fighters out there. He should take on the winner of Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins. And I keep telling folks, you're really putting too much emphasis, and you're putting too much money in the bank. You want to be careful. You do want to save, but at the same time, you want to spend so you can make money. It's that old saying, you know, that old cliche saying, in order to make money, you got to spend money. It's the same thing with fighters. You got to put them in with opponents that are going to build them up, make them prepare. Just because the WBC ranks him at a number doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to represent that number. And we found out that he's merely a prospect still learning on the job. And Teddy Atlas, got to give him kudos. He called it. He definitely called it.
Yeah, you know, this is a guy, he's one of those guys a lot of people talk about in the gym. There's one trainer that I was trying to get on that I wasn't able to get on, McAfoley, tonight. That every time I see him, he doesn't really follow the game, but every time I would see him, he'd ask me about Ismael Salak, you know. And is my phone just chat?
No, I can still hear. Go ahead.
Just tell me that you can't hear me, and I'll just switch down to the I think my headphone's not.
There you go. Now I can.
Yeah.
Now we can hear you clear.
my deep radio voice. Yes.
That's what we're looking
guy,
for.
You know,
we're
it's kind of choppy. I don't know. I think they put like a new layer of lead into my building because all of a sudden my reception's terrible. But anyways, this guy, he's more of like a gym fighter. People are always talking about him, you know, Ismael Salak. And his trainer comes through and brings trainers to the Fortune Gym or brings fighters to the Fortune Gym often. And so he's there, and, the guy's in shape. I think maybe he went stale, and Steve talked a lot about this. We're talking about this on TNR, and people get annoyed that I make the reference, but it's what journalists do when it's somebody else's point of view, but it's a good point you want to extrapolate on. So
right.
Steve pointed this out. He fought three times in 2011, Salak did. But this is his first fight since, you know, November of last year. He's taking on another guy that's, like, undefeated. He's probably been in the gym this whole time. They may not even don't even understand the concept of going stale in the gym, you know, where you're working out, you kind of peak. Even though you don't have a fight and something's wrong, you don't know what it is. You're in shape and you can do things, but, you know, you've passed that peak and you need to take time off. And I think these guys that just spar instead of fight, which is a completely different thing. This is what happens, you know. You fade the back end, you don't know what to do, and they've moved him into a top ranking so that he's fighting for belts or fighting on TV. He's not quite sharp and ready, and now you got a guy knocked out.
Well, this is the thing, too. I mean, there's nothing wrong if you're not active in the ring and you want to stay active in the gym and you want to work, spar and you're working out. The thing is, though, is that a good trainer is going to work on the things that you lack in. That's the whole purpose of being in the gym. That's the whole purpose of sparring, is to try to work on things or do things you normally wouldn't do on fight night. Now, staying physically fit is okay, but if you're in the gym and you're out 4, 5, 6 months and you're able to, this is the age you can watch yourself on YouTube. You can, call somebody for a DVD about, of your fight, and you can see these particular flaws. You become a student of the game. You have to go back and correct those flaws. Out of the ring for 6 months, and they have that old saying, practice makes perfect. But if you're doing it wrong all the time, then you're just perfectly doing it wrong till fight night.
Yeah.
And that's Salak's problem, man, is that he was out in the gym. He was preparing. I mean, he was getting himself ready. But he wasn't necessarily fixing the things that are broken. He wasn't necessarily putting, he was putting duct tape on it, and it only lasted for so long. Because we know what happens with duct tape when it starts to rain. It just falls off.
The guy just... relaxation is key with a fighter, learning how to deal with, a guy that, okay, he's taken my bombs, he's still here, now I got to do something. You know, conserving that energy, kind of holding, staying within yourself, making it through to adversity, those things are learned in the fight. You can spar all you want to, but the difference between sparring when the guy cracks you a good one, he's not going to hit you with three more to knock you out.
In right.
In the fight, he's going to do that. And that was the difference here, I think he's still got a lot of skills, but at the same time, I don't know.
That's the worst kind of knockout, is to be kind of in control, let it slip away from you, and all of a sudden, boom, you're knocked out, or you're TKO'd. You know? we'll see. The quicksand loss, you know, it's the worst kind. So, I mean, I'd rather be Yandale Evans than Ismael Salak right now. Because at least you can come back like, hey, I got caught. And you learn to box, keep your hands up, you know, and it's almost the way Arislandi Lara won last week. I mean, people went kind of crazy about, you know, Ronald Hearns, oh, he's shot and horrible. At the same time, they took away from the fact that Arislandi Lara, like, dropped a serious left hand that probably would have dropped anybody in the division. It was brutal. And that was the same thing with Fortuna here with Evans. I mean, you just met a pure puncher. It doesn't mean you're over. But
right.
Salak, he's going to be like, what the hell happened? I was prepared. I've been training this whole time, you know. So, I don't know. We'll
I think that's
going to
be the haunting part for him is that, you know, he was prepared. He was training. He was in the gym. But the thing is that he's now got to walk away going, I was in the gym, and I was training for a fight, but I wasn't training to correct some of the things that I've been doing, and finally somebody was able just to catch me on it, and lights were turned off.
Yep.
So he can grow from it. But he's just got to now go back to that drawing board and correct those mistakes that he should have done when he had the free time to do it. You know?
Yeah.
That's boxing for you.
Now he knows. Knowing is half the battle.
Hard lesson learned, man. Unfortunately. Hard, very hard lesson learned, you know? I'm really excited about tonight's show. You know, it's always fun. We do a roundtable, and we always do it a little bit different here on Leaving the Ring. We got some recognizable trainers. They're going to analyze it and break it down and then give us their prediction of what they think is going to happen Saturday night. You know, I haven't been really keeping up with the whole Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto 24/7 series, but I did catch the end of the last episode with Floyd on there and Cotto. I was able to listen to a little bit, well, watch a little bit of it, but I saw Floyd, you know, tweeting out there saying that he was apologizing to his audience, saying that that HBO didn't put up the right films, bits that he was
giving. Apologizing for being boring.
Yeah, he was apologizing. And he was like, you know, I don't know. I guess everybody else has been telling him the 24/7s have been great, because I would tell him, like, bro, don't worry about it. The rest of them have sucked.
I haven't watched for years. I got kind of forced to. We went to the fights in Pomona to see Ramon Chocolito Gonzalez. Oh, my goodness. What a fight.
Oh,
what a wonderful
yeah.
young fighter he is. The guy, that was pretty cool because, you know, we're there in Pomona and there's all these Mexicans, fight fans, you know, we're all there. And it was like, oh, like ninjas, all the Nicaraguans. As soon as Gonzalez came out, it was like Nicaraguan flags like exploded
yep.
from the crowd all around me. And the room, it was like a series, like a Vegas atmosphere, just chanting, screaming, every punch. You know, it almost felt like a Manny Pacquiao card. The guy next to me on press row screaming and hitting me with his elbow as he's getting excited. It was
feeling beer on you.
Awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. And Gonzalez just put his man down. The guy was moving and doing pretty good, but every time Chocolito would get near him, he just let his hands go. It's so heavy, and just took the guy out with uppercuts. It was just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I heard about it. Red, our publicist, called me up, and he was like, man, it was like being at a big fight, you know, the way the crowd was being, especially for the Nicaraguans. They were out there. They were screaming hard. They were storming hard in that fight. Too bad I couldn't make it out there. Hey, let's patch in our first guest here on Leaving the Ring. And fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. You're always welcome to. But we're going to be moving at a really fast pace here on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. You can catch up with myself, Dave Dwenison, Mr. Gable Montoya, a.k.a. The Dark Cloud, and we'll talk some boxing here. Now, let's get
Ernie's Ernie's changed it to now The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight. Who will slay you down if you get crazy and stuff, you know. So the Road Warrior, Mr. Glenn Johnson, we can get a hold of him right now, calling him up, see if he answers his phone. I did text him and let him know we're going to call him in a short bit. So, hello, is Glenn Johnson there?
Hey, how are you, man?
Good, sir. How you doing?
I'm good.
That's good to hear. Well, Glenn, you know, you've been on the show numerous times. You're a good friend of the show, and we're a huge supporter of the Road Warrior. And you never let us down when it comes to fight night. You come out and you try your best, you do your best, and that's why so many fight fans follow you and adore you. But we got you on here for a reason. We got a round table here for Floyd Mayweather versus Miguel Cotto, and you're one of the guys, man, that breaks the fights down to the gritty. And we want to hear what you think, what your thoughts are. How does Miguel Cotto solve the puzzle of a Floyd Mayweather, and how does Floyd technically, soundly break down a Miguel Cotto?
You know, I don't see Cotto winning unless for some reason he land a power punch. I mean, he have a puncher's chance, but I think that's his only chance. He's slower. He don't move as well. He's there to hit. So, you know, and he swell up much easier now since he fought against Margarito. And, you know, now he just seemed like his face swell up so much easier.
Right.
So I really don't see a good chance of him winning the fight because he's not the same guy. I think there's a lot already taken out of him. Out of that fight.
Glenn, let me ask you something, because, you know, Pedro Diaz has been brought into the camp, and this is the second time he's involved with Miguel Cotto, but he brings in something a little bit different than most other trainers. He brings in a scientific view of how to build a fighter. Now, in your opinion, is that just a little too late for an older fighter that's kind of stuck with his old ways, or is that an added, and could that make a difference when it comes May 5th, fight night?
It could be added. It could be a added piece because it all depends on the fighter. I mean, if he's in there paying attention and know that he need to get better on something, and the person is there teaching him what he need to get better on, and if he's listening and he have the understanding that he want to get better, then he'll learn. You know, but for the most part, some guys don't believe they have something to learn. They don't believe that they have something to get better. They're comfortable in what they're doing, especially if they're winning for a long time. He lost some fights, so I think he should have a mindset where, you know, I lost before, so that there's always something that I can change and do better.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gabriel, got anything?
Yeah, go on. Okay. With a fighter like Mayweather, who's so versatile and he keeps range very well and his poise in there, his presence in there kind of keeps people almost at a distance, what do you do? Do you mix it up as much as possible? Do you go all in at the beginning and just full out aggression if you're a Cotto? You certainly don't try to box with him, do you?
No, I don't think Cotto can box with Mayweather because Mayweather is faster, he's slicker. He have more move than he have. So I just believe that he have to be smarter about how he fights. He can go in and throw a combination. He have to work the head and work the body in the same combination. You can't go in and throw. You got to throw like a shot to the head and a shot to the body, come back to the head and go back to the body because he will roll his shoulders. But when he roll his shoulder off the head shot, you're still looking to land a good body shot and then you
right.
come back and show something up to the head again and let him roll again while you're really trying to land a good body shot. So, but you have to show him something at the head to keep it, to make him roll his shoulder, to keep that shoulder busy. But at the same time, you have to be careful that he don't reset and try to pick you off. So, you know, it all depends. If the fighter have the ability to do it and his trainers know what they're looking at and they tell him what he needs to do, and if he have the ability to do it, you have a shot. But if you don't have the ability to do it, then, your shot is limited. So that's basically what I see in the fight. I believe Cotto have a puncher's chance, but that's his only chance. He's not going to win any other way.
I think a lot of us agree with you on that one. Go ahead, Gabe.
Floyd's best punch is probably the right hand and probably that right rear uppercut. He throws those really well, and it seems like Cotto is probably open for those two punches more than any other. Do you think that's why they match made this? Besides the money that he brings, obviously.
I mean Mayweather is a smart fighter. He's not undefeated all these years. you know, because he's not smart. He, you know, he fight the fights that, you know, he pick fighters at the right time. He's very smart at looking at the talent and where the talent is now and to know that he can compete against it and beat it. So if Mayweather choose a guy that he want to fight, more than likely, I think he already have the game plan down before he even choose that guy.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Yeah, I mean, especially seeing him. Once I was talking about on another radio show called Punches and Bunches with Tony Whitby, way Floyd Mayweather was mimicking Cotto. So you know that he's been watching him for some time and studying him and kind of seeing the flaws that he brings to the table. But Glenn, let me ask you this. You know, when you see
it, a pretty good Cotto.
The Frankenstein? Yeah. When you see a guy, which I've never really kind of figured out why other fighters haven't tried this with Floyd. I mean, obviously you don't know what you're getting yourself involved with until you step in the ring with that particular person, but Floyd has kind of showed there's some age in the legs, and he now kind of sits more down on his punches, and he'll kind of let you close the distance and push you back. But what I haven't seen is fighters that allow when they see Floyd shut down and try to use the shoulder roll and stand his ground, they just rather come forward. Wouldn't it be a smart idea for Miguel Cotto, who's slower, to try to go around him and make Floyd turn so he opens up and drops that right hand so he can be able to catch him with a left hook?
Yeah, well, it depends. It depends on where he is when he's going into that shell, into that defensive move. If he's in the middle of the ring, you surely have room to step around him and do so and try to be creative and do some things that you think might work. But if he's up against the rope, it's not much room to go around him, because if you try, then you're going to put yourself on the rope and then he can take advantage. So it all depends on where he is, and then the other thing that I think you need to do is to try to set him up. See if you can show him something to let him throw a punch, and then you can come off that punch with the counter. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to try to attack it and see what work and see what he will fall for and what he won't fall for. But Floyd is you know, he's been smart in all his fights so far, because he's successful to win all of them. So, you know, you could go in there. You want to go in there with a guy like that with a couple of game plans, because at the end of the day, you have to really challenge him mentally to see what you can get him to bite on and what he won't bite on and kind of work from there.
You think mentally Cotto just hasn't done anything, and he's kind of kept Floyd in the same stage since the beginning of his career? I like what you're saying, and I agree with you, but mentally Cotto doesn't really have this. I mean, he has the spirit of a fighter in the ring, but he doesn't really have that spirit of intimidation outside the ring, does he?
No, you don't. I think, you know, I think Cotto against Floyd Mayweather before the fight with Margarito, that would have been an interesting fight, because, you know, he was a confident guy. He was fighting so much better and looked a little bit more complete to me then. Now he just looked like a guy that's been lifting weights and trying to bulk up and be stronger, because I guess mentally that's make him feel a little better about himself, because he didn't like how he was pushed around and get beat up in that fight. So I think he went and lift a lot of weights and all of that stuff. Now he got slower. He's not as fluid with his punches. He's trying to punch harder. And to me, that just makes him more vulnerable for the Floyd Mayweather style.
I agree. I definitely agree. Glenn, what's on your agenda? Are we going to see you back in the ring or anytime soon?
Yeah, July 13, ESPN2. I'm going to be fighting in Chicago. Andre something, I don't remember his last name now. A guy from out there in Chicago. So I'm training for that now, getting ready. It's a 74 pound bout. Light heavyweight competition, but I'm going back to super middleweight after the fight anyway. But I've been at the ring for a few months now, and I'm going to start there and work my way back down to the super middleweight division.
That sounds great, man. Can't wait to see you get back into the ring. Gable, if you got one more for Mr. Glenn Johnson, go right ahead. We got a scheduled guest at 5:30, Mr. Barry Hunter, at After Glenn.
Just while we while we have a fighter on, I'm not sure how many more fighters we're getting. I know we have a lot of trainers, but you're fighting a guy like Mayweather who's so relaxed and, like, again, that presence that he's got, the ability to keep rein. Is conditioning really the key for the guy? Because you're going to be working probably twice as hard as he is, right?
Oh, you definitely need condition. And I think, you know, with a Mayweather, I think the worst thing you want to do is power punch. What you want to really do is throw fluid punches. You want to able to put the punches together and just kind of make contact. And then you can timely put shots in there when, because he will give you a shot here and there when, you know, every so often he will slack off and you get a good shot in. You know, we saw Sugar Shane Mosley got a good one in there. Exactly. And he's not, you know, Mosley was not at his best where he was fast back in the day. I mean, that would have been a great fight that Mosley in his prime, Mayweather in his prime. That would have fight that I would love to see. But, you know, we didn't get to see that fight. We saw the Sugar Shane Mosley that was past his prime. So, you know, but he still was able to land a punch, and for a brief second, you know, he looked like he might pull it out. I mean, I'm sure a lot of us was holding our breath for about 10 seconds here. So,
yeah.
that would have been a great fight a few years ago.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well,
yeah,
Glenn,
I agree.
Can't wait to see you back into the ring. You're always fun to have on, and I got to tell you, a lot of listeners, fight fans, love to hear you talk, especially when you break down the fights. Can't wait to catch up with you again, brother. Thank you again.
Thanks, man. I appreciate the moments, man. Thanks again.
All right, there you go.
Always a pleasure, brother.
You know, there you go, the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson. What was that?
Every time he's on, I picture him just about to get on like a Learjet, like in Miami, and the sun is shining. You know, puts the shades on, gets on the plane, and goes somewhere. You know.
Being in a nice suit, you know, with a tie, leaning over and telling you, stay thirsty, my friend. Stay thirsty.
He finishes the call and, like, throws the cell phone over his shoulder and just leaves. Like, it's not even his phone. You know?
let's keep moving along. We got a stacked show here on Leaving the Ring, our roundtable. It's really circling around the trainers in the game, the guys that make the huge difference of our sport, the knowledge, the guys that are helping out the fighters reach their goal. Our next guest is going to be Barry Hunter, who's helping Lamont Peterson. And let's see what his take is, and maybe we can get him talk a little bit about their upcoming fight with Amir Khan. What do you think,
yeah,
Gabe?
I hope so.
I did text him. Hello, Barry.
Hey.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How's everything?
Doing good, man. Hey, thanks for coming on. We've had you on numerous times on a roundtable or when you have an upcoming fight with your fighter, Lamont. And, we got a roundtable tonight, for the Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. So my name is Dave Duenas, as you know, with my co-host Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. So let's get down to it, man. What is your take? What do you think the strategy is going to be for a Miguel Cotto to try to figure out the puzzle of Floyd Mayweather? And what is Floyd going to have to do to possibly, because he's been saying, noting that he's going to stay aggressive the way he's looked in the past in his fights, and try for a stoppage against Miguel Cotto?
Well, it's definitely, you know, Floyd's call to do, you know, exactly what it is he wants to do in the ring. But I think, and, you know, the way I look at it, you know, he's been so successful all these years, the way he's been fighting, there's no need to, in my opinion, change what made him Floyd Mayweather world champ. But, you know, of course, that's his choice. And Miguel Cotto's, on his side of things, I think Cotto, you know, in the amateurs, I used to watch him in the amateurs.
Uh-huh.
He was a hell of a boxer in the amateurs. And he was aggressive with it, too, you know. And I've always liked the style because it's kind of aggressive along with being slick at times, too. But the thing is, I think the difference that'll be in this particular fight is the fact that Cotto has been in so many different wars. And if you look at Floyd hasn't been in those same type of wars that Cotto has been in. So therefore, he hasn't taken as much punishment as Cotto has taken over the years. And therefore, I think that could be a key factor in the fight. If Floyd stays the way that Floyd normally fights, he's a very, very good counterpuncher. He's very patient in the ring, and he's very cerebral in the ring. On the flip side, if he stands there and trade with Miguel, for what reason, I don't know. But if he does that, he definitely gives Cotto a chance to win the fight and a higher percentage to win the fight.
Yes,
do you see,
I agree.
Hi, Barry. Welcome to the show. This is Gabe Montoya.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. The only scenario I see him, Cotto, winning is like the random that left to the body that he's done it before with, and Floyd turns and, you know, goes to a knee like any guy that just had his liver frozen. That's the only way I see him winning. Other than that, don't you think he's just wide open for right hands? You know, it just opens up the right hand from Floyd, and then
I definitely think he would leave himself way, way. I think Floyd has too much left in his arsenal as opposed to Miguel Cotto. I think, as I said earlier, the only chance that I think that he has to actually fight with Floyd or have a chance to win against Floyd, so I say if Floyd just plans there and go toe-to-toe. You know, other than that, as far as outboxing Floyd, is not going to happen.
A shoe shining move, kind of attack early on, maybe. I kind of see him stinking out the joint a little bit, making Floyd come forward, you know. But it could end up being Gotti versus Floyd, too, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said before, you know, watching both guys come up, you know, both of them from the amateurs all the way up to professional, fighting the world champion, you see over the years how one has been in wars, and you know, and you wonder how many or how much of that dog he has left in him. And the other side, you see Floyd, that you know maybe one or two real grinding type of fights, but other than that, the man still got a lot of miles left on him. So you know, the only
like a Jordan or a Ali like hunger more than any fighter around right now, wouldn't you say? I mean, he's still to do his job at the top of its game, and he likes hurting people.
He still loves to do his job at the top of his game, and, you know, say what you want to say, love him, hate him, or what have you, the man trains.
Right.
He trains extremely hard, and I believe one of the reasons why he talks, you know, as he does and is as confident as he is because he knows the work he's putting in behind the scenes, you know, so... You know, like you said, that car has a lot of miles left on it.
Barry, let me ask you something, because taking glimpse here and there of the 24/7, not even with that, even in the past when Miguel Cotto was getting ready for his rematch with Antonio Margarito, it seemed to me Diaz was brought in for that scientific kind of analogy of how to build a fighter, or, you know, how to add something a little bit extra into him. But to me, I'm getting this take that there's more concern of making sure he's able to survive the distance, talking about his stamina and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Does that tell you a little bit, as a trainer, that they're more or less worrying about making it to the 12th round and now really working on a game plan to solve Floyd Mayweather?
I mean, you could look at it a couple of different ways. You know, it definitely that could be one. The ways to look at it, but knowing Miguel and watching him over the years, man has a warrior's mentality. You know, he's that type of guy. If you look, go back to that first Margarito fight, thing that got me was he took a lot of abuse, a lot of punishment.
Right.
But nevertheless, you know, he wasn't trying to quit. And it's very dangerous when you get to that level because, you know, this is the type of fighter that you actually have to save from himself. You know, and which is, you know, just a blood and guts type of guy. On the flip side, you know, you look at bringing, you know, fighters like Miguel, fighters like Floyd that are very, very seasoned, that has been doing this thing ever since they've been a baby, and coming down to the latter part of their careers. Now,
I mean, how much more can you teach him?
Hmm.
I mean, it's almost like you do it myself, taking a clay figurine that's already been made, put through the furnace, paint it, the whole nine, try to break it down and remake it.
In a sense, he's not really a built-to-last kind of fighter, Cotto. He's kind of slow. He's got that kind of thudding power, so he's going to have to be more of a volume puncher. You know, he's going to slow down at some point, and then we found out that he's not that durable. He takes a beating only for about 9-10 rounds, and then he crumbles. So, I mean, really what this is just kind of two good names against each other, I guess. I mean, I don't give Cotto any chance. I haven't since day one.
Well, I would say this. You know, because it is boxing, you know, anything could happen and has happened in the past.
Right.
You know, different fighters. So I got to give him at least that. But for the most part, if you look at pound for pound, fighter versus fighter, skill for skill, and what's left in the tank, even though I give him that outside chance, smart money and the odds say Floyd should walk away either by a blowout or even the stoppage. Because of the style of Miguel Cotto and the style of Floyd Mayweather, is picture perfect for the way Floyd fights.
Yeah. Let me ask you this.
Flip it down to the co-feature. I'm curious what he thinks.
Go ahead.
I was just flipping down, though, because, you know, they're selling Shane versus Alvarez as like Shane's never lost to a Mexican fighter and he's never been knocked out. But wouldn't you say that Canelo doesn't fight like your average Mexican fighter, and that's going to be Shane's downfall?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a young lion, man. And, you know, and I think the kid is for real. I definitely think that, you know, there are bigger tests out there for him, you know, at the right time. But I think he's, you know, it's his season now, you know. And, you know, with all due respect to Shane and some of the other older fighters, you know, they are starting to appear and be old. And you're starting to see it now. And, you know, so therefore, the reality says that Canelo should go in there and do his job.
Yeah, I agree. Barry, before we let you go, let's talk a little bit about a fight that's coming up for yourself and your fighter, Lamont Peterson, here against Amir Khan, the rematch. Some fight fans can't wait for this. I can't wait for it. We love the first fight. The second one, though, some guys are saying now that it's being veered away from you guys' hometown, going to Las Vegas, that this spells for the revenge for Amir Khan in terms of going to the judges, if it goes to the judges. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, you can look at it all kinds of ways. And, you know, and I don't think DC played a role in that. Because, first of all, you know, we didn't choose the judges.
Right.
We didn't choose the place. We didn't choose a referee. We had nothing to do with a man in a black hat. You know, and actually, I was waiting for James Bond or somebody to step up with so much controversy going on. But, you know, nevertheless, you know, an unwritten rule in this sport, as you guys well know, is the fact that if you're the challenger, you got to take the belt from the champion. And if you're the champion, you must defend your title. Mm-hmm. And we did that, and they didn't do that. So, and a true boxing fan, connoisseur of the sport itself, will see skill for skill what that fight was all about. You know, I saw running. You know, I saw a lot of punches being thrown. I saw a lot of punches being deflected. We didn't complain about the neck pulling. I think Lamont may have mentioned it to the ref maybe once or twice. And after he didn't do anything, we took matters in our own hands. We didn't complain about the pushing, you know. And the knockdown I didn't complain about, which wasn't a knockdown.
Right.
You know, my whole mission was going there and take from this man. As a conqueror do, they take, and that's what we did that night. And so, you know, I expect to do nothing no different come the 19th of May. You know, skill for skill, if you look at the two and just put it on the paper, if you look at the two, skill for skill, there's no comparison. Me personally, I think that Amir, you know, and no disrespect to him, is a very, very good athlete, but I think he got some shortcomings when it comes to the overall game of boxing, my opinion.
Heck.
Now, I agree. You know, there's only so much you can learn in a certain period of time. But that said, I mean, you guys went to like game plan B or C. You know, immediately he said, I knew he was doing this. When I talked to Lamont here in LA about it, He's like, I just have to go straight to him. So at this point in training camp, I mean, do you change anything from the first fight and the first training camp, or do you do the exact same things in this camp that you did then?
Well, what I wanted to do this particular camp is key in on some of our weaknesses that night in that fight. If you know us, and you know, and a lot of people do, we train extremely hard. If you hear that grunt in the background, that's Lamont, background grunt. This is his second workout of the day. And so we ain't getting it in. The thing is, for the most part, I wanted to key in on some of our weaknesses, you know, and make that not a flaw for us. On the flip side of that, still, I saw so many things that night that we could have exploited and we didn't exploit in the mid-combat.
Mm-hmm.
Inside fighting itself is an art form in itself. You know, I'm a big, huge fan of the Mexican fighter and the Latino fighter. You know, I go back to people like Lupe Pinto, Lil
right.
Danny Red Lopez, and fighters like that, which was very, very, Cesar Chavez, very, very skilled fighters on the inside. And so when my kids were small, every kid that I ever trained in my 32 years of doing this, I've taught them to fight not only from the outside but from the inside as well. So I have a lot of confidence in Lamont and the rest of the kids in this gym that if the fight take a turn for inside work, we're equipped to deal with it. If it go out to the outside, can we box? If you look at Lamont's career early on in his professional career and all through his amateur career, he was a boxer. So, you know, it all depends on what they bring to the table that night. We'll make the adjustment accordingly.
I can't wait for the rematch, man. I'm excited about it, and I'm still picking again Lamont Peterson to take this one. Well, Barry, I appreciate you coming on. It was a lot of fun. Can't wait to get you on again when it gets closer to your guys' fight with Amir Khan in Las Vegas. And keep up the great work, brother.
Man, thank you. I appreciate it, and call me anytime. Thank you, guys, and hope to see you there May the 19th.
Okay.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care.
Peace.
There you go. Barry Hunter, the trainer of Lamont Peterson, has got his fight coming up with Amir Khan, the rematch. And it's a heated, emotional rematch for both fighters. But Barry getting on here and telling us his take about Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. So far, 2-2, man. Everybody's picking Floyd Mayweather. I haven't heard anybody yet. Maybe the few other trainers are going to be coming on. Excuse me. Here on Leaving Ring, they're going to tell us a little bit something different. Or maybe they're able to solve the puzzle of Floyd Mayweather. I don't know. We got Ray Woods coming up in about 3 more minutes.
I think you should just settle into Mayweather. That's pretty much the whole thing.
Pretty much how it always goes, you know what I mean? We do a Floyd roundtable here on Leaving the Ring. You know, it's kind of hard to pick against a guy when he's picking all the right moves. You know, picking all the right moves. And just like Glenn Johnson said, you know, he's a smart, intelligent guy. And he said, I think he had the game plan before even picking him, before picking Miguel Cotto, before offering the fight and getting Miguel to sign it. They already had the game plan of how they were going to beat him. And you know what? I have to agree with them strongly about that, you know?
Yeah, to me, it was all like, it was just key, and I asked him straight up. I asked Floyd when he was in L.A. You know, it's like Miguel Cotto eats right hands the same way Victor Ortiz eats right hands, you know, early, often, and all night. And he's also open for the uppercut. And both him and Leonard kind of dropped character for a second and, like, laughed to each other. And then he kind of looked at me and was like, yeah, you know, he's an experienced fighter. You know, he's a good champion, you know. And goes into that whole thing. You know, exactly what you're thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say it, but, I mean, like, the curtain kind of moved for a second, and, you know, they were laughing back there. It's for a reason, and it's going to be, there's a reason why I have, you know, I don't know. Such, I don't have ire for the fight, but it is what it is. You know, it's not a, it's just a fight we already know who's going to win. What do you think about Mosley versus Canelo, though? I'm interested in that fight.
You know what?
Interview with him, you know.
Right. From the beginning, you know, when it was first announced, I obviously was not one of the guys that were really standing up and saying, ooh, good match, let's see it. I still am not one of those guys that's getting out of his seat and standing up and going, ooh, good match, let's see it. I think it's an interesting fight. I do think that it really kind of – what it's really going to evolve around is what can Canelo do with Mosley? I mean, I think a lot of folks are picking Canelo to beat Mosley, but in what fashion? You know, he says he's not under pressure. He knows he's facing a guy that's a Hall of Famer. He seemed really calm in our interview, but there's a calm before that storm, and I'm just wondering how he's going to react if he does land his big right or his big punches, and he's not able to do what he did at Gomez. He's not able to do what he did with Baldemir or Kermit Cintron with Shane. He's going to have a mover. We've seen what Shane does when he doesn't have his way. He can get on the bicycle, and he could dance around, and he can make it a bit difficult. So I think there's a lot of curiosity in this fight here is, what happens if Shane does land that big right? How does Canelo act to it? He's only 21 years old. He's never really been in that major situation except with Miguel Cotto's younger brother, you know, which is ironic. But if he does take it, is able to overwhelm Mosley with his combinations, how well does he receive and does he cut the ring off when Mosley decides to get on that bicycle? I think that's what's the most interesting part about that match there. But like I said, I'm not, I don't know, just not.
He's probably developed. He's a kid, you know, I wouldn't call him the Mexican Mayweather, but maybe in the sense of his work ethic, from what I understand, is very high. You know, he loves to train, Canelo does. And,
right.
And he's going to become, you know, for a while there, I was like, what's going on? And I think they went kind of soft on it, on his, you know, the way they got him the belt. But the thing is, at the core of it, you can't always – it's like knocking an Al Heyman fighter. It's like, well, why wouldn't you have a guy that gets you overpaid for fights? You probably should applaud the guy for being able to hustle a dirty business like this. So you can't knock Canelo. Just take him as a fighter. He wants to get better. I mean, I don't think he's the fastest guy on the planet. He's got kind of cement feet. Movement kind of troubles him a little bit. But he's also young in the amount of fights that he's had. I mean, he's got a lot as a pro, but he didn't have many as an amateur. So he's – probably around 50 fights right now, maybe a little more. You know, I think he's going to be patient with Mosley. He's got to seek and destroy, not get too tight. He probably will be a little more nervous than he would care to be when the fight opens up. But just settle into a rhythm of just jabbing Mosley and looking to land that right hand. Worry about other things later. And I think eventually Mosley will get walked down, I say around like 7, 8, or 9, a couple shots where he's just not responding in the corner, and it'll probably be a quick stoppage.
I don't know, so man, because
the storyline. Never been knocked out, never been beaten by a Mexican.
You know what? I can't see that happening. I'm going to tell you why. I think, Shane, we've seen him hold. I think Canelo's going to have to figure out the grabbing of Shane.
He doesn't respond to movement very well, but he does keep his range well. He steps back and counters well.
Yes, he does. Right.
So I think that's key to avoiding a guy, and he stays behind the stick. I think he'll have that holding hold well. He like reaches out and clutches. He's open for 1-2. It's going to happen in there.
You know, the only wish I have is here. You got a guy, they call him the Cinnamon, and you have Shane, who we call the Sugar. There's two scenarios that can happen with this fight, which is it could be sweet enough, it's going to be good, where it's like delicious, or it could be too sweet, where you know you just don't want to have another bite of it, you know. That's the only thing I'm kind of worried about. I'm hoping it's going to be delicious sweet, not the you put too much sugar in it and now the coffee's no good to drink. Let's call Ray Woods in and find out his take about Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, even about Alvarez.
Oh.
And hey, Ray, is Ray in?
This is Ray.
Hey, Mr. Ray Woods, how you doing? This is Dave Duenas with my co-host and partner Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing and Leaving the Ring. How you doing, sir?
All right, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Hope we caught you at a good time, not a bad time.
Oh, this is a good time.
Great.
Relax.
All right, on, man. So are we.
How you doing, Ray? Nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear you, too.
Now, first off, I don't think I need to make the introduction, but, you know, if we get some new listeners that are just barely kind of falling into the line of becoming a boxing head, Mr. Ray Woods is the father of Diego Corrales, the late Diego Corrales, who had a sensational, the fight of the decade, and I think the fight that's going to be going on for years and years and years in the history books, who's with Jose Luis Castillo. Now, Ray, we got you on here because we got an upcoming fight happening May 5th on Saturday night against Floyd Mayweather Jr. versus Miguel Cotto. We want to hear your take, your breakdown, who wins, and how did either one of these fighters figure each other out? How do they solve the puzzle to get a stoppage or to make it go the distance?
Well, first of all, we haven't got a chance to see what Cotto was doing in training. You know, they kind of like blocking that out.
Right.
But I'm kind of picking Floyd because Floyd is not going to get into a fight. Everybody knows Floyd is not going to get into a fight. He's going to hit you and run, cover. Now, if Cotto, in my opinion, come to Floyd with his hands high, using the jab, and stand right on top of him, everywhere he moves, stay right on top of him and force Floyd to fight, he just may be able to catch him and maybe even knock him out.
How did he do that, though, Ray?
When Floyd started to move and just use your feet, hands high, and stay right on top of it. You know, I tell you, if Cotto could watch Diego and
Castillo.
What's the kid's name? Not Castillo.
Freitas.
Arcelino Freitas. If Cotto could watch that, if he could watch that fight and kind of emulate that fight, he just may be able to get a chance to catch Floyd with something and knock him out. Just maybe.
That's the one we talked about. You and Diego had talked, and you told him Red Dog. Is that the one?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. I told Diego. Diego called me and asked me the way how should I fight Arcelino Freitas. I said, you remember how we fought Gainer? I said, we Red Dog him. You remember the Red Dog? He said, yeah. I said, stay right on top of him, force him into a fight, and he'll open up and you'll catch it. You force him to fight, and he'll open up and you'll catch it. And that's what happened.
I like that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a badass little story. And that's one of the best knockouts I've ever seen, too. It's almost not real when he catches Freitas on the ropes. And you just know before he even disappears out of frame that the ref's going to come in and just wave that shit off, you know. Diego just took it to him. Walked through the hell like no one. But you think that's what Cotto's going to have to do is he knows it's either you're going to get slowly picked apart and knocked out or outboxed at a safe distance. He got to go in there and make it violent. As violent as possible.
He's got to go in there and force him to fight. If he try to box Floyd, he's going to get just taken apart. Busted up, taken apart. Yeah.
I've said it before to one of the other trainers, and I think it's very possible. This could be like a Gotti Mayweather situation, where Cotto just doesn't know which way it's coming from at some point. I mean, I think Floyd has got that in him, and he probably wants to do a little bit better than Pacquiao did against Cotto to show his dominance even further. You know, it's the unfortunate truth of our business.
Ray, let me ask you this. Miguel Cotto being at 154, and I know a lot of folks are making a big deal about, you know, Floyd challenging him at 154 because Miguel's been there campaigning for a minute, though. But do you see that he carries the same power that he used to carry at 140? Or is this power a little bit just overrated? And that's why Floyd is planning or just noting – I mean, he's nodding down that he's going to sit in the pocket with him.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Floyd's not going to sit in the pocket with him. But Cotto shouldn't. Yeah, 154 pounds from 140 to 150. Yeah, he should carry the power. You know, yeah, he should carry the power. Yeah, he should carry it well. He should be good and strong. You know, and not drained, not feeling drained or anything. Yeah, he should. Yeah, he'd be fine at 154.
You know, Floyd's money punch is that straight right hand that he likes to throw. What does Miguel Cotto do to get around it? How does he shut that down, nullify it?
First of all, you have to have you're a professional fighter. You should already know how to do this. But, you know, I understand Florida's a specialist at getting it in. But basically, leaving your hands where they're supposed to be, up, catching it, or slipping it, either one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, all he can be, if he can get all the way in, smother it.
Now. Now let me ask you this, because a lot of folks are saying the key to get into Floyd is by Miguel Cotto returning the way he used to be, which was hooks to the liver, hooks to the body, break him down. But by doing that, so leaves him open to the straight down the pipe punches. Am I right?
Right. Well, you know, when you here's a lot of boxers when you throw your jab, throw your right hand, hook, you have to get down. Right after you do it, get down, roll or something, and counter his counter. Do what you have to do to not get hit with that stuff. Even though he's still going to get hit, but he don't have to get hit every time Floyd throw a punch. He can slip and roll some of that stuff and counter. You know what I mean?
Right.
He don't have to get hit with everything. He just got to stay focused 100%. Do not let down at any point in the fight, because Floyd can end it. And just do what he needs to do. I don't know what their plan is, but
I get in a couple kicks, too. You know, he'd like kick him a couple times and maybe only get like a point taken away. That's a something, you know? You're like warm and then just come out and give him another one. You know?
Yeah. Accidentally meet him in the ball or something.
Yeah. Something. Bite him. You know, just something. Maybe get the trainer to distract him and you can hit him with a chair. You know, the whole bit.
You know, a lot of guys, the Yeah, I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
A lot of them low blows on purpose. They on purpose, man. They're not sorry. They tell you they're sorry, but they're not sorry.
You know when you're going
to do it. Right. You can just make it not look so blatant.
Right. When you see a fighter brings in a trainer that, and I've asked this to the other guys that were just on earlier, bring in the whole scientific and kind of the part of conditioning and stuff, but you more or less see that every time they try to put it on film, it's always about conditioning and conditioning and conditioning. As what your trainers are, what does that kind of tell you a little bit about what's going on in the training camp?
Well, they trying to get that guy in conditions, he can go 12 rounds strong. What they doing, I can't say, but you know what's going on in the boxing world. You know, these guys and these steroids. I'm not pointing the finger at either one of these guys, but you know, some of these guys can fight all night long. You know,
Does that kind of surprise you and kind of make you sit back and go like, I don't know, man, I don't know.
Right.
Well,
you know,
I mean, this particular pay-per-view is interesting because it's using two different types of extra drug testing in it for its main events. In the main event, they're using Mayweather testing, which is a special order by through USADA, and then. But they do they do certain tests, but they don't do other tests. One in particular, and then Mosley Alvarez is being tested by the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association, as opposed to the United States one. And they're doing more. Their tests are like state of the art. They're up to the minute in their screening and everything. I mean, there's just no way you're getting past them. So it's interesting. It's kind of a groundbreaking pay per view in that sense, but. Still, the overall landscape, the whispers in the gyms, whatever, the guys that kind of nudge each other. Yeah, I mean, this sport, combat sports in general, right?
Right.
Or pretty
right,
much just
right.
pretty. I think we can all agree there.
Absolutely. Hey, Ray, what happened to Guy Robb? I thought he was going to be on the May 12th card in Woodland. Is that did that fall apart, or is that still happening?
No, it fell apart. It fell apart. Matter of fact, they told us we was off the show. Then his manager, Repo Rick, called me yesterday, and they wanted to put him back on. I said, no, man. I said, no.
Right.
We, you know, the fight, they canceled us, so we took about a five-day break, you know. Not no sparring, you know, just a little bit of bag, and the guys and put back on a little bit of weight, you know, a little bit of weight, and I don't want to put him down and rush him down to 126. I said no way. I said you had it, you kicked him off, so no way. I said we wait to June 22nd.
Good for you, man. Good for you. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think that happens to a lot of our fighters. You know that they. They get kind of pushed and shoved into a match when, you know, they shouldn't. We're seeing that a lot of late, to tell you the truth, you know.
Right.
And that's good that you knew exactly what you have in your hands, and you're like, no, you know, it's not going to run your way. Even with the managers and stuff, you know, they got to kind of look at the game the way it's built. You just can't
right.
throw every guy in
right.
at every open door that's available.
Right, right. Yeah, you're right, because, man, you get your guy beat that away, you know.
At the same time, I mean, you think, you know, the longer you keep him out, the longer he's going to dwell on that loss. I mean, do you want to get him back up on the horse? But it's got to be against a guy that's, you know, that's more of a confidence builder than a threat,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was ready to go. I mean, he was pumped. He was ready to go, man. You could see it, the enthusiasm when he was sparring, man. He was,
oh, that's
you know,
good.
He was ready, happy to get back on the horse again. But no, he don't dwell on that loss. You know what? He knows he can beat that boy. You know, he
got away
his,
from
you know,
him a little
was,
bit this fight. You know, I agree with you. Like it was a perfect stoppage because it didn't.
Yeah.
It just the fight was starting to get away from him, and these are two real young kids. No one deserves to get knocked the hell out here. And you guys, it was perfect. It was a great fight, and then
he was a little hard headed at that fight. You know, he wanted to, you know, he had been doing good. He's not young guys, you know, he's doing good now here. He don't have to listen anymore. He can do what he want to do. And he found out that's not true. You have to listen.
Even at 30, you know, especially like 8-0, you got to just stick with it, the whole listening to your trainer thing. You know?
right. Right. You know, and a lot of it's outside interference. People bragging on him, telling him this and telling him that, man, you doing this all by yourself, man, it's all you. And he's young, and he believed that.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you run into trouble. Now he knows. You know, he admitted it, that there was a lot of outside interference, people telling him this and telling him that. He admitted it. I say, you don't have to tell me. I know all about it.
Right. You see, I've been in the game long enough to know.
right. yep.
Yeah, well, Ray, out of nowhere.
Yeah. Definitely, man. Well, Ray, I appreciate you coming on, unless my co-host has some other questions.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
We'll talk soon, Ray. I'm going to call you anyway.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was fun having you on, Ray. You know,
yeah.
I gotta make another trip up there to your gym and you know, sit down and watch Guy Robb. I tell you, man, after being over there, I did talk about it on the radio, and I said the intensity the kid brings really reminds me of some of the other guys like Antonio Margarito, the way they spar, man. It's just nonstop. They have no other gears. It's just one gear, and that's destroy.
Right.
You know?
Right. That's him.
That gym was just amazing to see, you know? Yeah. I was just saying, your gym was just amazing to see, to know where Diego, you know, grew up and everything. That's just awesome that you've kept that. And then I love how every gym has a different personality, like King's Gym, up where Andre trains, and that gym there, It was pretty amazing, man. So anyway, have a great day, man. Great to talk to you again.
Oh, nice talking to you guys. You guys take care.
You too, Ray. Thank you very much.
All right, bye.
But there you go, Ray Woods, the father of Diego Corrales and the trainer now of Guy Robb, who's going back to his featherweight, who had a tremendous fight with Joel Diaz Jr. from Boxing 360 on Showtime. And it was a war, man. It was a war between prospects and two kids that went in there, and they just definitely – they left it in the ring. They made sure that everybody knew that they were there to make a stance, but only one guy was able to walk out of there with their arm arisen.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things. It was a perfect stoppage, you know, in that Rob didn't get, like, posterized, didn't get humiliated, you know. He got stopped, and he'll have to deal with it, but I'm sure he's, like you said, he's moved past it. You know, and the fight just kind of control went to Diaz, and it went to him for a little bit too long, and that's how the fight went. On the other side, like, the whole Diaz Jr., what's that fight? I think he's fought, like, three times. I think he's supposed to fight May 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Took a guy out this last weekend in four rounds, and then he's going to fight again May 7th, like so Monday. That shit's busy as hell.
Yeah,
you know?
keeping himself busy, you know, definitely. I want to see Guy Robb, too, get back in there, you know, but I can't be mad at the decision of what Ray Woods was saying, because he's absolutely right, you know. You, if you take a few days off, you know, it's really kind of jumping off the tracks of where your wheels were on, and then trying to get the guy back motivated or get him back into the fight mode when their letdown was being told no. You know, it can be a more damaging than getting into the ring sometimes. Let's take some calls, man, from some fight fans, since we got some time. Our next guest comes on at 6:30, and then our last guest will be at 7 o'clock here on Leaving the Ring. Let's keep it rolling. Let's go with our first caller, huh, Gabe? What do you think?
Let's do it.
Let's go with RTG, who wants to talk about this weekend main events. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. Hello, RTG. 609. Are you on mute? Okay, let's move on
down.
Are
you on mute?
Let's go with CT. You there, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing
good,
good
man.
Brother.
How you doing?
I'm all right. Pretty excited about these, you know, two fights coming up this weekend. I'll give my input on Alvarez and Mosley. I agree with you guys. I think, you know, Alvarez, for being 21, I think he's pretty poised in the ring, you know. He's not really slow-fisted himself. He's got some okay hand speed. I think his jab is going to get to Mosley. And I just think, you know, Mosley, he just really can't pull the trigger. I mean, I know it has something to do with the last two fighters that he's fought, but I still see him, you know, trying to get that shot in, and I still don't see him doing it against Alvarez. I think Alvarez doesn't really fight like a Mexican. He knows how to put combinations together pretty well. Like I said, he's pretty poised in the ring for a 21-year-old, and I think his youth and you know, just his overall ability is going to get to Shane, and he's going to get a unanimous decision. I see it going for Alvarez.
Yeah, you know, I was saying this just last night on another radio show about throwing a punch every, 30, 40 seconds is not going to get the job done.
Right.
And I know that him coming on, and you know, and I'm like every other Shane Mosley fan, we want to see him succeed. We want to see him do great. We want him maybe to pull the last, you know, the last one out of the hat. But in order to beat a kid like Canelo, you're going to have to throw more punches. You're going to have to go for broke. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to be aggressive the way you were aggressive picking up on Bella, you know, to get that number. That's the way you're going to have to be with Canelo, you know. But only the old man's going to know what he's got left in him. You know, we all know that he's a very self-believer in himself, and I think that's what we love about Mosley, and we want to be wrong, but these fights that he's lost, we haven't been wrong about it. You know, we haven't, we've given him a chance, but go ahead, Gabe.
I want him to go out like Rocky Balboa in that last one, like Pacquiao versus Mosley. That felt like Rocky V. It was horrible. Like, focused on his son, like, way too much. It had one good part in it, and that was about it. The Mosley Pacquiao fight didn't even have that. I want him to go out like a warrior, how we remembered him, you know, and that maybe he brings out a war and really doesn't just be like a gatekeeper that kind of like pokes at you with a spear from afar, but like really tries to kick your ass and kill you and has to get taken out. in order for you to pass. That's what this should be. And if Canelo is really going to be a champion, that's what he should be intent on doing. I think Mosley, if you actually did try to knock him out, and not in the Pacquiao, let me kind of throw some flurries every once in a while and look like I'm trying to knock you out, but really come for him, I think it would bring out the last bits of lion shame, and it would show us what Canelo, who he really is. I hope we don't get the scenario I'm envisioning, which is just a quick stoppage. I hope that it's a great war because of the of what each guy is coming to do. I don't think it will.
The only way I can see Mosley getting a little bit of a chance is if Alvarez gets a little bit overconfident, you know, which I don't think he will, but, you know, just getting a little bit overconfident and then Mosley seizing the opening. But that's the thing. I don't know if Mosley can, you know, seize the opening and then, you know, deliver, you know. But that's the only way I can see Mosley having a chance in this fight. Alvarez gets overconfident and Mosley sees an opening and throws one of those hard punches and catches Alvarez off guard.
Or he gets tired, you know. I mean, he loves that altitude training up in Big Bear, you know. But there's a school of thought that says that's overrated, you know, that it's more mental than anything. And if you don't time it right when you come down, you don't get the benefits anyways. And you have to come down like 10 days from the fight, and your body kind of reacclimates, and then you get the benefits. These guys who come out in the week of the fight, they don't really reap the full benefits from what I'm gathering. So that's kind of an interesting factor. I think that, you know, I just want to see both guys try to be great, and maybe Shane return some of his luster by going out in a good one. Because I think that it would depress me just to see him get taken out in six or, you know, caught and kind of stopped, TKO on the ropes. How sad, an old man. But that maybe, you know, the stuff that he tries to sell us is actually true. I would hope that that's the case. Just one more time. But, you know,
yeah,
I don't think so.
the Cotto and Mayweather fight, I think the key for Cotto is basically, you know, use his jab, but also come in behind the jab. I know he's going to take some risk in doing that, but, you know, just try to pressure Mayweather back, but get inside Mayweather's chest and definitely go to the body. That's very much key for Cotto. I don't think he's been a brutal body puncher since he's departed from his uncle. I've seen a definite change in his boxing ability somewhat. But I think against Mayweather, you know, Mayweather knows what he's going against. He knows what type of fighter Cotto is, and he knows he squats down, he throws hooks, and he's open for counterpunches all night. And I think Mayweather's ability to counterpunch, his accuracy and his speed and timing, it's going to be too much for Cotto the whole night. And I think Mayweather's going to win by decision, if not a late stoppage in the corner.
I'm still really leaning towards a late stoppage. I'm picking ninth round for Miguel Cotto to be stopped by Floyd. I think there's a lot that's going to come into it. Once that right hand finds its home, it's going to continuously knock on the door until Cotto opens it up and allows him to take foreclosure on that house. Not just that, how his face swells up quick now. His face hasn't held up that much, even when he was at 140. And with those right hands just landing over and over and over. And the thing, too, is that we focus on Floyd's right, but even Floyd's jab, his occasional jab that he does throw out, it's a thumpy one. It's a sharp one. It's one that actually splits the guard, and it's one that's going to open up the doorway, you know, open up a hallway for that sneaky uppercut or that straight right that's going to just come down that pipe. There's a lot of things that weigh terrible for Miguel Cotto, but in my opinion, if Miguel and them were working on a game plan to defeat Floyd, you would have to set him up with a feinting right hand because Floyd likes to bend at the waist coming down. You feint him with a right, and you come back with a left. And you possibly can catch him in the top of the head, but then you got to figure in you might damage your left hand. You might not daze him, and he'll adjust to it. But Miguel's got to go into it with a game plan of being reckless, but not a crazy reckless. A disciplined reckless, you know, in this fight.
Yeah, pretty much, like, mix it up a little bit. But he's going to definitely run into some trouble, you know, if he fights, you know, just he's got to come in behind and definitely go to the body, you know. But I just think he's going to be in for it all night Saturday.
I think so, too. I think so too, CT. Hey, thanks, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold on the hang up, okay?
All right, thank you.
Yep, I mean, going to that body is going to cost them, though. You know, it could cost them a lot of change. Because when you bank on something that's going to leave you vulnerable to those counter shots that Floyd's going to throw, those sniper counter shots, his nickname is Money. And I think he's going to make change of Miguel Cotto when he decides to go for that body. That's the one thing. He's going to have to be a bank robber. I mean, he's going to have to be in and out quick in 15 flat. Is that right, Gabe?
You're talking about Miguel Cotto and you're talking about being quick. Those two things just don't
Yeah. There's furious, but there's no fast and the furious in this one here, you know? Let's patch in some more fight fans. We got 15 more minutes before we patch in, before we get our next guest, who's going to be Jose Benavides Sr., the father of Junior from Top Rank Prospect.
he's like not very fast and furious, Miguel
right.
Cotto.
let's try again. RTG wants to talk the weekend fights, but can't wait long. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on
hey,
the
man.
Ring.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, brother.
Yeah, man. Happy to be on the show. What's up, guys? What's up, Gabriel Montoya?
Glad to have you on, brother. What's on your mind?
Yo, is Gabe on the line?
Yeah, he's right here.
Yeah. Hey, Gabe, what's up, man? My arch nemesis. This is
Robert
really? The Genius, baby.
Oh, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Just wanted to bless your show. It's my first time calling in. I'm listening. I'm liking what I hear. You know, you guys seem like some knowledgeable boxing fans. But, you know, you guys didn't really touch on the Marco Huck fight. And I don't know if you guys don't show European fighters love or you just don't think this is going to be a competitive fight.
We're just an hour into the show, actually. What was your take on the show? We haven't gotten to that part of the show yet. We've gone through a couple guests and we're working our way there. I don't know if you listen to the show very often. It's a little like jazz, you know, you have to kind of let back, you know, relax and just kind of let it happen instead of trying to force the issue.
This is my first time listening. I'm a pretty busy guy, but on my first show, Gabe Montoya was nice enough to bless me with his criticism. So I just wanted to call in and just see if there was any validity behind it. But I like your show. You guys are all right. All right with me, Gabe.
Pooh, not creepy at all.
All right, brother. So what do you want to talk about, man?
Marco Huck. I think that he was robbed in his fight with Povetkin. I had him winning 9-3. And I think that he's probably going to steamroll this guy. But in my opinion, he should be WBA heavyweight champion.
You think he's going to steamroll Olaf Alabi?
Yeah, Olaf's all right. But, you know, he's just a Klitschko undercard fighter.
What does that mean?
I think he fights on a lot of Klitschko undercards, but
he gets paid probably better than anybody in America on an undercard. he's a smart businessman. He's a cruiserweight. He's got to be in Europe because there's no market here for him. That's why he's
right.
over
well,
there. That's why he's signed with K2. But Olaf Alabi is one of the best boxers that's never had an amateur career out there. He's on a serious streak. He's a very dangerous fighter.
Very dangerous.
And I thought he got robbed the first time when he went 12 with Marco Huck. There's no evidence to suggest that Marco has gotten any better. In fact, Ola seems to be on something of a winning streak, picking up a belt.
Well,
I think Ola winning much better and much more clear this time.
What did you score the Povetkin and Huck fight?
Who cares? I'm talking about the first time Marco Huck and Olaf Alabi fought. This is a rematch.
Right, but that was
did you not know
what
that?
What have you done for me lately? You know what I mean?
I just explained it. You don't listen very well.
And you touched on his business savvy and that there's a lack of cruiserweights in America. I'm talking about Marco Huck versus him, and I'm saying that Huck's last fight, he beat a heavyweight champion. I don't care what the outcome was, you know, and I'm saying that he's got
he didn't get the decision. And considering he's Marco Huck, who generally gets bad decisions in his own country, maybe it's just karma or he didn't pay the right guys. But that was a close fight. He didn't win 9-3. You're tripping.
You thought it was a close fight?
It wasn't that – I wouldn't say it was 9-3, but did you see Marco Huck versus Olaf Alabi 1? That's more relevant to the question, isn't it?
Yes, but it was a long time ago. Did you see Roy Jones, Bernard Hopkins 1? It's different down the line. You can't – you know what I'm saying?
2 years ago.
I'm not saying it's apples
and
oranges, but it's different.
All right. So what's your point?
You say he's going to steamroll him. I say you're absolutely wrong. All right.
I say he gets a knockout under six, and I say you shouldn't be so salty on the phone.
Wow, not gay at all. All right, next caller.
Thanks, Robert. Oh, that's great. Let's why do you gotta have stalkers, dude? They come on my show and stuff.
Where are they always guys? Come on. Guys, eyebrows are more waxed than Miguel Cotto's.
Oh man, that is too much right there.
That's not right. Why can't I have women stalkers? Why don't I get women callers? Hell, what the next guy did I piss off by moving to LA? All right.
Let's go with one of our friends, man, that call in frequently here on Leaving the Ring. D, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, that was funny. Hey, my man. Man,
he
was talking
to you. I know, man.
Was that creepy? Was it me? Was it creepy?
That was a...
Seriously, dude.
That
was
something
creepy?
Different, you know?
That was kind of creepy.
Yeah. Hey, hi, it's Glenn Close. You know, you don't remember me, but...
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, all right. Calm me down. Hey. Tell me something good, man. Yeah, I'm a little freaked out.
Hopefully you won't be hearing back from him no time soon.
You remember last week when I said that, you know, tuning into HBO 24/7, seeing Miguel Cotto and his best friend crawl out of the bed with each other, I thought I was watching Bravo. Here, I thought I was listening to Bravo again, you know?
Yeah. Damn. That was kind of crazy, man. Uh-oh. We had one like that in a minute.
I know. We need that, man.
Did we all just collectively get the chills just now? I think we did.
Yeah. I don't know what was up with that dude right there. That was crazy.
You know, it's funny. The last time we had a stalker on the show is remember that one kid that wouldn't leave me alone, Gabriel. That from the UK that was always upset. You know, because we would say something about David Hay. You know, and then he finally called in and was trying to tell us that Amir Khan was going to beat Floyd Mayweather and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but D, what's up, brother? What's on your mind, man? What fight you want to talk about coming up this weekend?
I definitely want to talk about both of these, you know, the main event and Shane. Definitely a huge fan of Shane. I think Alvarez is going to beat him down, man. I think it's going to be one-sided. He might shock us. I hope he does shock me because we definitely do for a good showing of Shane Mosley, man. It's been a while. Just wishful thinking, though, I think. I think Alvarez is going to be too strong, too fast. He's going to clobber Shane, I think, man. I don't see him being able to, unless, you know, they say he trained and he was hurt for the Pacquiao fight and all this, going into training and stuff.
You know, I can't picture Saul just clobbering him up, you know, because I keep going back, even though Shane is not the same of the old, but I still think that he's got the tricks in the bag. They're going to get away and make it a hard-earned win, victory for Canelo. And meaning that, what we saw with Manny Pacquiao, we saw Shane do a lot of movement and made sure that he wasn't there to be clipped. Now, saying that he had an injury to his body, he was still able to move away pretty quick from those punches. I'm thinking if he's 100% coming in this fight, which is hard to believe for any fighter, not just talking about Shane Mosley, but any fighter in general, most fighters don't come in 100%. Most fighters do have some type of discomfort, you know, soreness. There's something physically wrong because when you're going through training camp, your body is human. It's not a machine. So I'm being led to believe that if Canelo turns up the heat, we might see Shane throw some salt on the canvas so that he can glide around and not be, you know, overwhelmed and took over. So that's why I keep saying I think it's going to go 12 rounds, Canelo. I think Canelo is going to win in a comfortable, unanimous decision. stoppage?
Right.
I don't know. But you know what, man? You know, Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud, he's made some predictions here on Leaving the Ring, and he's made fools out of a lot of folks when they're like, you're crazy, dude. You're crazy.
I mean, I gave up on him two fights ago, man. I don't think he's going to have enough to match. He needs to be able to match that young boy, man. I don't see it.
Cotto has no chance whatsoever. I mean, like, 0.1%. Okay, I'll give him that. You know, like, he's got that left hook to the body that's random. That could land. But he hasn't done that in years. He's slow. He's still on the front foot too much, even though he bounces around a lot more now. He gets dead tired. I really think that Margarito was coming on in the rematch, and he was just a hair or just a step faster than Margarito, which is why he won that fight. None of those things tell me that he's going to beat Floyd Mayweather. I mean, it's that thing of, like, when they asked Sugar Ray Robinson, how did you know you had him in trouble? He signed the contract.
Right.
He didn't work in, you know, doing the USADA testing, which is inferior. He didn't work in the, like, two free kicks or, like, get to hit Floyd with a stick or throw something random at him at any point in the fight. That's all. He'd have a chance to run up and, like, hit him in the body, knock him out. Other than that, you know.
I feel like I could go take a shower now.
I don't know, Gabe. I don't know, man. Something telling me Cotto's going to come to fight, man. Something telling me Cotto's going to be there, man. And I think it's going to be I think he's going to put up a hell of a fight, man.
I hope so. You know, I'd like to see him being close, not get hit too much, crafty, and that Pedro Diaz. I want him to be wearing the same when I met him. He's like this black, like, Undertaker suit, black on black, red tie. He's got that white hair streak. The dude is intense, man. I tried to interview him. He wasn't having it. You know, he's like, this guy speaks Spanish. We did an interview, but it was, I got the short answers, you know. Seemed like a very knowledgeable dude that I wouldn't want to mess with. So I'm very interested to see what he brings to the table here. But I just think part of it is you got to be faster than Floyd. I mean, maybe quick with your feet to stay right on him, like Ray Woods is saying, Red Dog.
You got to smother him. How I see somebody beating Floyd, you got to smother him and make him uncomfortable. You got to do that multiple rounds. And you got to have the gas in the tank late in the fight to be able to do it,
I don't think he's got the gas. I just don't think he's got the gas. He's got like an eighth-round window, you know, to kamikaze and knock Floyd out. Everything beyond that, he's screwed. Agree or disagree?
I say the same thing, man. I just want to see a good fight. I hope it ain't the lopsided. That's what I'm afraid his face won't hold up.
There's that, too.
Yeah.
That's what I hope, you know. I know they're like big names, and they're all kind of ceremonial fights. I hope that they actually just turn into real fights. That's like always my hope. You know, like, while I'm pointing out what I think are just obvious mismatches or, you know, heavily favored fights, if you will, still, I'm always hoping for, like, a good night at the fights. You know, I'm not going to this one, but
I figured you'd be at this one. Oh, man.
No, I said this before on the radio, and I meant it, you know, that Floyd should be in jail right now. He's doing his sentence, and he moved his jail sentence because he had a date with the MGM Grand against a PBA opponent, and the court said that was okay. You can go make millions of dollars even though you confessed to domestic violence. I would be saying that that's okay by going. So that's how I look at it.
Yep. Well, D, thank you very much, brother, for calling
definitely.
I'm going to put you back on hold, man.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, D.
if they ever fight, him and Pacquiao ever fight, man, I'm coming out there, man. I want to meet y'all cats.
Yeah, brother.
Definitely, man.
Even if they don't, I'm going to make my way out there eventually, but that'll be definitely one I'm going to try to get some tickets for, though, to come out. Next year, right?
You got to do that.
It's going to happen next year, right?
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
All right, brother. I think of anything, the Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight happening next year. I my prediction is your boy, the genius, will call in a lot sooner than that. We'll get that first before we get to Floyd.
Are you allowed to give yourself a nickname? I mean, like, I earned the Dark Cloud. You know, people started actually calling me that because I was that depressing. And then somebody just christened me the Dark Knight, and I know exactly why. And it's probably because my article Tuesday, and I always wear black. I like it. I earn the nicknames. You can't just give yourself a name. You got to earn it. know, look at old.
But you can write a book of how to ruin it. You can write a book of how to be a host of a radio show and get kicked off of it in what, 2 days, 3 days?
That's true.
Fight fans, if you want to call in right now, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Like most of our listeners, if you're creepy, please don't call in. We don't want to hear you. Like, I swear,
you,
man.
David,
we think we're brutal sometimes, you know. I mean, you know, like I was telling Gabriel early today, and I can't say the name of the person we were trying to get on, but their publicists and people were like, I don't know, man. I don't know. You guys are pretty harsh. You guys are pretty pretty tough with your questions, but I think we're going to have to pass. And we were like, okay, no problem, you know. But you think we're tough, you gotta check out what people say on Facebook, on Twitter. Our listeners, they're pretty tough too, you know. You're not going to get
You know, I think that I'm generally good time Monty, you know. I'm just enjoying talking about the sport of boxing. Sometimes I got to ask hard questions, you know. You don't have to answer. But, you know, you should not come on. I mean, that's just – are we not in a sport about people that fight each other for money? I mean, that just seems silly.
It's – yeah, that is really, really, really silly. Mr. David Chan, please check the board here on the switchboard and see who is on hold so that we can patch them in and find out what they want to talk about here on Leave It in the Ring. It's 6:30. We should have our next guest, Jose Benavides Sr., calling in to talk to us about his take of the Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto fight. Hey, man, you know what was a fun fight that happened on Friday night on Showbox? New Generation was the Garcia versus the Pinaraza fight. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to check that fight out. It wasn't the main event, but, man, it was a really, really fun fight. You know, that kid Garcia, he's got no skills in the department, but guy had a world-class heart and chin. He wouldn't just stop. I mean, it was like watching watching a five-year-old go after a kid that was 12 years old that knew how to that had balance and could throw harder punches and big punches, but the kid just didn't know how to stop because he wanted that ball that the older kid was holding back away from him. You know, it was just nonstop, man. It was a fun, really, really fun fight. And it was so fun. I watched it like five times. I didn't even care about Davila on the card, you know, and my theme. I didn't even care about that. I just liked the Garcia, the way the kid was coming, you know. And you just sit back and you go, God, if there was only one way we could take that heart and put it in with another guy. Not taking nothing away from the Puerto Rican kid, man. He came, he brang it, but he was throwing some hellacious shots. He was throwing some really on-point shots, but that kid Garcia was just – he wasn't going anywhere. You know, he was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to stay, and I'm going to keep coming forward. Really fun fight if you didn't have a chance to check that out, man. You know? But
– Sorry. I answered – my headphones are broken, and it's really kind of throwing me off, Dave, because you know how much we have to communicate during the show, and so I –
yeah.
I was trying to listen at a distance, but I was doing texting with a potential guest. I'll let you know as it goes. Sorry.
Okay, let's back to the fight. We're still waiting for Jose Sr. here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get another.
He's fired.
I think we do have him on. Let's see. Let me.
He's getting a haircut.
Let's see. Do we have Jose Benavides Sr. with us right here on Leaving the Ring?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? This is Jose Benavides Sr., man. Thank you so much for the invitation, man.
Hey, ¿qué pasó, brother? How you doing, man?
Nada, aquí entrenando duro.
There we go. Well, you're the father of a prospect that we're really high on with this Jose Benavides Jr., but your son, David, woo, boy, I saw some tape on the kid. Man, what are you feeding these guys, man? I mean, we're talking about normally there's only one kid. Like, I got two boys. My oldest is the one that's got he's got the it factor of being a fighter. My little one, well, he's still my little one. But you got two it factors here, man. So what's going on, brother?
Well, you know, man, everywhere I go, you know, I'm blessed, you know, to have good kids, man. You know, my thing is just when I started this, you know, I just wanted to, you know, for these kids to be good people and, you know, to help others and, you know, good things, you know. Man, you know, everywhere I go, you know, they don't believe, you know, I got to convince people that they're my kids, you know. Mostly support, you know, and people that I look down, I don't even think so, you know, but they are really tall, you know. And, you know, I always have jokes, you know, I tell them, you know, I love them like they were my kids, you know? But,
right.
You know, so, I get that a lot every day, man, you know, and I'm so blessed, man, I'm really blessed, you know?
Hey, you know what, bro? I got a great idea for you that can pan out after boxing here, because if both your kids make it as world champions, you know those dudes that they freeze their semen and they sell it? You might want to think about doing that, dude. You know what I mean, brother?
For the audience listening, like, what he means when he says I'm blessed is that he looks about 25.
Yeah.
You know, and his kid's like 18, 19. I remember at the Wild Card, I was like, who's his trainer? And he's like, his dad. I'm like, which one's his dad? The guy's standing next to him. I'm like, that's his dad? This is his brother.
I thought the same thing.
The funny thing today, you know, Mario, the guy, you know, the guy that comes on TV a lot.
Yeah,
Mario,
Lopez.
Yeah, Lopez.
Yeah, I mean, he's been seeing me for a long time. And today he's like, man, you're his father? Oh, my God. You know, I always told him. I thought you were like his brother or cousin or something, you know?
Hey, you should have told Mario, órale, man. You're not the only vato around here in the Wild Card that's got looks, ese.
There you go.
Well, let's get down to it, Jose. Let's talk a little bit about this fight. There's a roundtable for the Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto fight coming up on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo at the MGM. Let's hear your take, man. Who do you think is going to win? And what did both of these guys got to do? How do they have to nummify each other to try to get the victory in their fight?
Well, first of all, man, I'm really, really excited to see this fight. My kids are really excited to see this fight, man. We can't wait, man, like everybody else, you know. But I think, man, you know, it's going to be an easy fight for Mayweather. You know, man, he's just so good, man. He has a good defense. And, man, he's just so good, man. A lot of talent, good. He's just good jab, you know. And, man, you know, he's just great, man, you know. So I think it's going to be an easy fight for him. Cotto, I think, in my opinion, I think he's good, don't get me wrong, you know, but he's slower, you know, and he's nothing really special about him, I think, you know.
You know, if let's say you had Miguel Cotto, what would be the strategy?
Yeah, and that's another thing I was going to say, you know, really, I never had nobody to fight Mayweather before, you know. I mean, hopefully, you know, by the time, you know, my son is older and then he's up there, you know, he'll be retired by then, I think. But you know what? I think definitely the key, if I was training Cotto and if I was, you know, I never really seen the mistakes that Floyd does. But everybody has mistakes. Everybody has bad habits, you know. And
right.
I was before I called you. You know, I was looking at him with Oscar De La Hoya. He is hittable. You know, but Oscar at that time, he was faster too, you know, and he was catching with the jabs and the right hands. Like I was hearing before, you were saying, you know, the best thing is for somebody to use the right hand and come with the right. I mean, the left and come with the right. You know what? It's kind of, yeah, you're right about that. It's so easy, but, you know, if you don't practice that, you know,
right,
how are you going to execute that, you know? But if I had Cotto, you know, I think I would definitely, a lot of people don't concentrate on the stomach, you know. He leaves his body open a lot to go to the right to the stomach and then maybe come with the right upstairs, you know. It's easy for me to say, but like I say, you know, if you don't practice it, how are you going to do it, you know? The you know, to the body, to go to the liver also, you know. Man, you know, it's hittable, you know. But how are you going to send somebody to hit the body if you haven't practiced that? You know, you have spent hours and thousands of times trying to hit that body, you know. And that's another good thing, you know. I think if Cotto goes to the body, forget about the face, because that guy's going to protect his face a lot, man. He moves his head, he covers his face real good with the shoulders, and moves too. So it's going to be hard, man. It's just going to be hard for Cotto, I think. I don't know what are they thinking about doing, but I would definitely say go to the shoulder right, to the chest. Yeah, the head moves. The body doesn't move that much, you know? So I think that would usually work, you know?
Floyd throws that leaping right hand, you know, or he throws that lead right hand, but he throws a lot of variations off that back hand. If you can slip it and get underneath, you got to take the body a little bit. You got to make sure that every time you miss, you've got to make him pay. I think do you think it's going to be a single shot fight, or do you think that Cotto needs to get him into exchanges? Or a little mixture of both?
I think, like I said, you know, I think if they were trained to go to the body more, a little bit more, you know, so Floyd could open up a little bit more. I don't think Floyd's going to open up, you know. He's just going to use his defense, you know, make him miss, make him pay. So as long as he doesn't stay in front of him, you know, he has a pretty good chance, I think. But if he stays in front of him, you know, he's going to get knocked out, I think, you know. But it's hard. It's really hard. You know, he's going against a guy that's so good and so fast that if he goes to the body, if he gets caught with that right hand, you know, he's going to go down. So he has to go to the body and move away, you know, or try to use the jab for whatever, you know, just to create an opening. And like I tell people, you know, I think the jab is the key for everything, you know. But you could have, I don't know if you did practice that jab a lot, you know. He has to, you know. Like I said, you know, if he didn't,
everything.
If he wants to use it, it's not going to work.
Yeah, Floyd is one of those guys. He uses that jab like a bludgeoning tool. You know, everything that he throws, it's economical, but it's got snap and power on it. Just not like one shot, you know, power. But it's
exactly just to create something and be smart. You know, try to use it as a counter punch. Also, you know, use the jab. You know, have your feet a little bit wide just in case he throws something. Go back, make him miss, make him pay. Maybe that'll work. Like I say, you know. It's just because, you know, if he throws that jab and he stays there, he's going to get caught also with the over right hand, you know. It's going to be a good fight, man. I think it's going to be like an easy fight, like when he fought Marquez, Gotti, you know. It's just going to be, I think, in my opinion, I think it's going to be something like that, you know. Cotto's really hittable.
Right.
You know, so... I believe, man, you know, it's going to be not an easy fight. First two, maybe three, four rounds, you know, he's just going to see what kind of mistakes is Cotto doing, and then he's going to capitalize on that and make him pay, you know?
Yeah, I agree big time, you know. Hey, let me ask you about this fight here that's happening on the same card that we haven't even touched on. Afonso Gomez had to pull out of the fight with Jesse Vargas. Now it's going to be Stevie Forbes, who originally was going to fight the Drunken Master, but he's going to get the money ticket going after Jesse Vargas at 147. What are your thoughts about that fight?
You know what? I know Steve Forbes really good. You know, he trained for the wild card. But before actually he was in the camp with Canelo,
right.
I believe. Man, you know, this guy is really motivated right now. I think that's a really dangerous fight for Jesse Vargas. I've been following Jesse Vargas, you know, because we're pretty much in the same way, you know. And I really like his style, you know. He does need a lot, you know. I'll be crazy if I put my son right now with somebody like that, you know. I'm just taking my time, you know. The last fight, you know, he won. Yeah, he did win, you know, but they were a little bit tough, you know, and he came up warriors, you know, but I think they're pushing them a little bit too fast. But maybe they could say, what do I know about boxing? You know, I'm crazy, you know. So,
right.
But
it's a
tough fight. You know?
I'm just glad they didn't put him in with Emmanuel Augustus. They could have done that. That would have been terrible. I think Forbes is a perfect test for him. You know, Stevie could win that fight, you know, on any given night. And if the kid's not real, you know, then he'll
exactly.
lose.
You know, he does leave himself open. He's really hittable. Steve Forbes, you know, he moves a lot. He's in great shape, man. I've seen him. And he was sparring a lot of good people here, man. And he looked good. You know, I was talking to his manager, and I was like, oh, wow. Wow, for an old guy, you know, like, whoa. You know, he has speed. He has a lot of movement and, you know. I think this fight is a little bit, like, my opinion, you know, I think it's a little bit dangerous for him. You know, the kid, man, has a lot of talent, and maybe if he wins, you know, hey, you know, good, you know, but I think it's a little bit dangerous, I think.
I think it's funny that Steve Forbes was going down to the Floyd Mayweather camp, and when he goes into the gym, everybody's kind of looking at him, you know, kind of see, you know, what a blank face, he said, and he gets a phone call from Eric Gomez going, hey, you know, Afonso Gomez is out. Do you want in to fight Jesse Vargas? And he was like, yeah. So everybody in the gym already knew that, you know, that hang out with Floyd. They already knew that this fight was going to happen except for Stevie Forbes. I think it's a great fight, too. I think it's a great test. I know some guys are saying that Jesse's got to go out there and just mow him up and get him out of there really quick. And I'm like, this is 2 pounds, man. You know, I haven't seen him getting, you know, knocked out or beaten like that. You know, this guy's still got a lot of tricks. I mean, is he an older fighter? Yeah, he is a veteran fighter, but I still kind of consider him a smart guy, a gatekeeper that can definitely not hand you over the key.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. Like I said, man, I've seen him train and he's in great shape. man, if Jesse Vargas knocks him out like in the first, second round, oh my God, we got a new star, man, a newborn star, you know.
That's impressive. Yeah. That would be impressive if he was able to do that.
And that's the fight I want to see also, like I said, you know, I've been following this kid, you know, I like the way he speaks, you know, he's great, man, he has a lot of talent, and he's a Mexican fighter, man, and he goes to wars, you know, and I think that's what the people want to see, and I think he has a great style.
I did too, you know, I wasn't so sure in Vegas, but I mean, I was sure of his heart, you know, and I like the idea that he's at 147, and you know, I'm not sure if he's going to be – he's not a one-punch knockout guy, but he's going to be a guy that's always in wars and always kind of in fights. And so he's got a beard on him. I'd like to see him and Jose at some point, you know, down the road.
Exactly. And the thing I like about him, I think he has a good chin, you know. He does have a good – and, man, I'm really excited to see this fight, man. I'm really, really excited. You know, I wanted to see – I was more excited when he was in the fight on Alfonso Gomez. But, you know, now Stevie Ford, wow. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's definitely a change of difference, you know, a big change from Alfonso Gomez to a kind of a slick guy. Stevie Forbes is old, and it's going to sit in that pocket where Gomez was going to be, he was going to leave, you know, openings for you to, you know, throw shots and hit.
But here's the thing, though, is Stevie came up in that Mayweather style. He was trained by Jeff for years, grew up in that gym. Practically, and Jesse's a product of the Mayweather gym, so there's that kind of connection there, in terms of, you know, who gave him the call, because Jesse's a Mayweather promotions fighter, he's a Floyd fighter, they called up their old guy to get in there with their new guy. There's that. I mean, I'm not saying anything, but he's going to understand, Jesse's going to understand what he's looking at, and probably, you know, I'm certainly you know, Stevie's going to know what he's looking at when looking at Jesse. But I find it interesting from that point of view, they kind of understand each other in terms of fighting schools.
True.
I think they're pretty much, they know each other, so they know the mistakes that he does, and I think so it's going to be easier for the Mayweather's camp, you know, to figure out how to beat Steve, you know. But he's in good shape, man. You know, he's in good shape. You know, he's in really good shape.
Hey, I want to touch a little bit about your youngest, David. And I just sent you something. We just can't just check it out. It's on your email right now. Sorry about that, Jose. I couldn't type fast enough for Gabriel to know what I'm talking about, you know, because we rely on each other on speaking here behind the scenes. But Jose, what I want to talk a little bit about is your son David. And I saw something. He was sparring Kelly Pavlik, and dude, granted that Kelly hadn't been sparring, hadn't been in the ring, you know, and definitely had some ring rust and everything, but he was holding his own. I mean, not even holding his own. In my opinion, my personal opinion, he was just really dominating him. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, it's really funny, man, because, you know, a lot of people don't know, man, but David, he's been training since he was 2 years old, man. That's all he knows, man. And you know what? And he's seen what his brother's been doing, you know, the cars he drives and all that, you know, he wants to beat my Jose, you know, and really, in his mind, he's going to beat him. He wants to beat him one day, you know, so he tries really hard, man. And he's been training all his life. You know, I went to separation, you know, a divorce, like maybe I said, like about 6 years. And, you know, that affected him a little bit, so he gained a lot of weight. But still, at the same time, you know, he was in the gym every day. He's been training all the time. And people underestimate him because, you know, he looked a little bit chubby, you know, and they would kind of laugh about him, you know, and this and that. But after they got beat, they're like, oh, my God, a lot of respect. And now he's only 15 years old. I you know, I call people with a lot of respect, and I tell them, hey, listen, I got David, you know, maybe if you guys need a sparring, you know, I know he's young, you know, I just want to see if I could put him in there, you know, and get a little bit of rounds, you know, and they're like, come on, man, he's a little kid, you know, but okay, we'll bring him, you know, and man, you know, we spar Fernando Guerrero, and he's like, whoa, man, you know, this kid is good, you know.
Right.
Coyote too, man, they underestimate him, and, you know, he has a really good jab, a good defense. And, you know, they underestimate him, and then when they want to come back, they get so frustrated, they want to trying to knock him out, but it doesn't work, you know. And Tibbetts really lose, you know, he's been training for a long time, man. Same thing happened with Pavlik, who's going up there, and, you know, everybody's like, oh, Pavlik's going to be smart. Wow, who's he sparring? You know, everybody's like, oh, he's sparring that kid right there. They're like, how old is that kid? Like, oh, 15. Man, everybody was laughing, and, you know, I felt really bad, you know, because David, you know, he gets intimidated a little bit, you know, because, you know, they were making fun of him. Oh, like, come on, he's going to get killed. Is that dumb, or is he crazy or something, you know?
Right.
But I know what I have, and I know who he's been sparring. You know, we got, before we went to Pavlik, we sparred a lot of people, a lot of good people, just to make sure that, you know, he's okay. At the same time, you know, I protect him a lot, and I take care of him. And, you know, he doesn't get hit. I'm even impressed, you know. So when we get up there, you know, people are laughing like, oh, my God, these guys are stupid. They're crazy, you know. But, you know, once they start going up there, you know, it's like, oh, wow. And after we did the first sparring, it was like, oh, my God, how old is he? I can't believe he's 15. You know, and now the next we sparred it three times every other day. So we came back again, and everybody's like, oh, David, hey, how you doing? Hey, Benavidez, you know, how you doing, you know? He did get the respect, and they thought, oh, now he's going to get killed. But he did good, man. And the last time, it was on Friday, the last time he sparred, man, he did so good, and he was so loose with the confidence, man, and everything. They're like, Robert called me, and he says, you know, man, your kid is good, man. He does have a lot of talent. And even Pavlik said, man, this kid, man, I think one day he's going to be a world champion if he stays with it, you know. And then if he stays hard, you know. So to me, that's all I want to hear, you know. That, to me, gives me a lot of motivation. And David gets really motivated, you know. He needs a lot, man. He's so young. You can't compare him to his brother right now. I mean, they're totally different styles, you know, different people. And I, you know, I will never compare him to his other brother, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what I saw of David was, for one, being a big kid, and 15 years old, he was able to move his hands. He was able to put his combinations together. I saw a lot for a kid that I couldn't even believe he was 15, first off. I got to tell you that, man. I was like, hey, let me see his birth record here, you know. he's a big boy, and he can put those punches together. So I'm really excited of seeing him. I know he's amateur right now. Can't wait till he turns pro. Can't wait to see what's next in line for your son, Junior, you know, who I've always been high on, and even along with my partner here. But Jose, hey, thanks again, brother, for coming on, leaving the ring, speaking to us, giving us your take, and can't wait to see either one of your boys get back on the ring. And to let people know that Jose Sr. Jr. and his other son, David, are going to be the pitcher cover for our Undisputed May issue.
Yeah, I want to thank you for that, man. Thank you so much for believing in us. Thank you so much, man, for giving us the opportunity to speak with you guys, man. We're just normal people, man, you know. You know, and a lot of people don't know, you know, I never box. You know, I train just to defend myself. But, man, I really love what I do, man. I dedicated myself to boxing. I really love boxing. And man, I learn every day, man.
Well, that's the way you do it, brother. Hey, man, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.
Right. Good talking to you, man. Take care.
Hey, there you go. Jose Benavidez Sr. here on Leaving the Ring, giving us his take. And, you know, if you haven't checked out his kids, you definitely can. You know, even the youngest one, he's an amateur still. But Jesus. And I'll figure it out, Gabe, because I was trying to send you the vid that I got. Just I can't relay the source.
Man. I mean, like, his kids are in shape, you know. That was the first thing I noticed about them. They like to train. They get in there. They fight, you know. Not to get all Robert the Genius, but, I mean, Jose Benavidez's abs are ridiculous. I mean, the guy is just like a gladiator. And, you know, that just speaks to the dad, like the work ethic, you know. So it's nice to hear you kind of sit there and talk shop with him like that, too. He's just a fun fighter person. Who else we got tonight?
We got Joel Diaz.
Diaz, right.
Who's the head trainer for Timothy Bradley. And, you know, I love getting him on, man. He's a really intelligent trainer. He's going to break it down. He's always fun to talk to. So let's call him in, you know, and let's see what we can get. And then we can go off onto our boxing schedule. And then we can talk a little bit about Paulie Malignaggi, which he had an upset.
Yeah. we're not talking about Ola Afolabi versus Marco Hook.
No.
We're not talking about it, Dave. Why haven't you talked about it? It's 6:15. Relax. Yeah. Be chill.
Oh, I'm not. Anyways, here on Leave It or Ring, if you want to call in, 347.
Hello.
Hello, Duel. ¿Qué pasó, brother? How you doing? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leave It in the Ring.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good, brother. Good, good. We have a scheduled interview with you here on the show. I hope you're not busy.
No. Go ahead.
Okay, man. Hey, well, thanks again. You know, you're always on here on the show, and we always have fun when you come on. This is a little bit different, though, because this is the Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto roundtable discussion. We want to know your take about it, who you think is going to win, and what does either one of these guys got to do to nullify each other so they can get the victory?
Are you talking about Mayweather-Cotto?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't think Cotto... I mean, Cotto has a lot of heart, but I think it took a lot out of him when he fought Margarito the first time, and then that was a beating. And then after that Manny Pacquiao. I mean, I seen him against Margarito, the last one. He didn't look too impressive.
Right.
I mean, comparing to speed and technique, as far as Mayweather. Mayweather's fast. He's slick. I mean, if you're going to come in and look for Mayweather, you got to have some fast combinations, fast feet and fast hands. And I don't think Miguel Cotto has it. I just think that Mayweather is going to be picking through the fight, doing some damage. I mean, I don't know, potential knockout. I don't see it, but I see Mayweather putting a beating on Cotto to the point in which the referee may step in and stop the fight.
You know, let me ask you this. You know, if you were training Miguel, if you had Miguel and under your tutelage, what would be something that you either correct or that you see from Floyd that you would tell Cotto to capitalize on?
You know what? At this point of Miguel's career, I mean, so much. I mean, you can't add footwork to a veteran fighter like Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto has his style. His style is, you know, moving in a slow motion way. I mean, he needs faster feet, because Floyd has fast feet. As before, you he moves his feet and he catches you with punches you don't see coming. That's how slick he is.
Right.
And I think I don't think Miguel Cotto has the speed to compare or even up to Mayweather's hand speed and footwork.
Gabriel, you there, brother?
Yes. We've been asking this of all the trainers. This is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing. Now, welcome to the show, man. If you had, you just say somebody gave you Miguel Cotto, the one right after the Margarito rematch. I mean, what would you design the game plan to be? I mean, all in, kamikaze, or try to box, be smart, and get a points victory? How would you approach this?
To approach Mayweather?
With this Miguel Cotto, you know, if you had him.
If you had Miguel Cotto, I mean, we would have to sit down and put up a great technical plan, because, I mean, as you can see, Victor Ortiz wanted to take it to him. You know, Victor Ortiz rushed him in there and got reckless in there against Mayweather. And really, you can't do much. And I just think that the best way to beat Floyd is put up a plan of moving. You know, you got to move. You got to make him commit. Make him throw a counter. And you know, using a lot of angles. Because, I mean, you can't just rush Mayweather. You can't. If you rush Mayweather, you're going to get in trouble.
You know, even Victor seemed to – he was getting closer and closer. It wasn't like he walked into a punch and got dropped. He freaked out, headbutted him, and then started kissing him and got knocked out because he's an idiot. But, I mean, if he had continued on that game plan, didn't you think that kind of pace and what he was able to kind of – I mean, he was walking through the right hands, and he was probably going to have a swollen eye in about three rounds. But it seemed like he was kind of getting to Mayweather a little bit, didn't you think, besides the mental makedown or breakdown?
Not really. I mean, Mayweather had the control from the beginning. Mayweather is a fighter that starts with a good tactic, and he is opening you up little by little as the rounds go. As you can see
right.
with Victor, with Victor, I mean, he was actually relying a little bit on letting Victor, you know, work on him.
Right.
And that's the reason why, as the round started, as the fight started going on, I mean, Mayweather was putting more. I mean, come on. I mean, you gotta be on top of the game. I mean, to watch that Mayweather's catching you with two straight rights in a row. I mean, come on, you can't.
But I mean, if you can take them, and your mentality is to kind of get in there and land, you make sure you land your thudding one or two. I mean, there's something
right.
there,
I mean,
too. He wears those giant Grant gloves. I mean, you know, nobody's getting knocked out with Grants unless you really walk into a left hook that you didn't see, generally. And wouldn't you agree? I mean, those are pillows. So maybe Victor felt like he could take the shot, and he kept coming. I mean, I know his defense is horrible. He doesn't move his head at all. But to me, I mean, I've watched the fight recently, you know, because I had to break down this fight, the Cotto fight. It just seemed like Victor was getting closer and closer, and then he just went all Victor on him. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, because and the reason why Victor did what he did is because he was getting frustrated. You know,
right.
if you want to get my opinion from that fight, Victor, I mean, that's what I think. What I think is Victor got frustrated first, second round, third round, and he said, okay, maybe I can get a rematch if this fight doesn't go the fourth round, and you know, it's over before the fourth. You know, but I mean, he did it very illegal. I mean, common sense. He really wanted out of the fight.
Right. Yeah. I kind of agree with that there. You know, Joel, the one thing that you said, and I really agree on that, and I wanted to touch on it, because when Floyd had announced he was going to fight Juan Manuel Marquez, I had said my whole take about it was that you have two counterpunchers, and the way to beat a counterpuncher is that you have to take them out of their tune. And I think that – do you think that that's what anybody that's going to face Floyd, even a pressure fighter, he's got to mold himself a little bit different, meaning that he's got to take Floyd out of that comfort zone, which is sit back and wait for you to lead in the dance?
Correct. I mean, if that's what you got to walk in a fight with not only one fight plan. You're going to have a couple of game plans. If one doesn't work, let's switch to the other one. You have to – always have a backup plan, because it's not always the way you think is going to go. I mean, you can't just come forward and look for Floyd when Floyd is so comfortable just waiting for you to make a move. Now, I mean, eventually Floyd is not going to stand there just look for you. He's going to come look for you sooner or later because he's a fighter.
Right.
And once you start making him come, once you start making Floyd commit to throw punches, you can work off of his work.
Let me ask you this. How do you take away that straight right from Floyd? How do you kind of shut that down and make him hesitate? Because once that kid gets in the zone with it, I mean, he throws not just one, he'll like triple it all in one load.
All you have to do with Floyd is don't let him set it up. You have to make him think. I mean, you have to be on your feet. You have to be on your toes. You got to pretend you're going in so he can shoot it, but don't go in. I mean, you have to make the little things once in a while, you know, so he can shoot it and don't catch you. If you just walk it straight in, flat footed, he's going to catch you. Boom, right there. I mean, you're going to have to be on your toes. You're going to have to, I mean, make the little moves forward and step in and step out, you know, step and get your angles. I mean, you know, you have to do a lot of coordination on your feet, moving in different angles.
It's Pedro Diaz. Do you think he's a good asset being added to the camp, or is he taking him away from possibly being Miguel Cotto and they're concentrating on, you know, making him last the distance?
Is this Mayweather?
No, for Miguel Cotto.
Miguel Cotto, I don't think.
You know how Pedro Diaz is, he's now involved in this camp. And he kind of brings kind of a different way of training, which I kind of like. But in a way, I kind of think, in my thinking and the way I'm kind of viewing it and seeing it, is that to me, it seems like they're not really worried about strategy. They're more worried about making sure that the conditioning is there for Miguel Cotto. Could that be the wrong way of approaching this fight?
Yeah. I mean, everybody sees it different. Everybody sees it differently, and I just think that he's doing is focusing on a fight
to have a lot of resistance, hoping that with his stamina he can get in there and maybe land a good shot or maybe get inside and have the stamina to continue a fight and maybe hurt Floyd. But, I mean, Floyd is a slow fighter. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of head movement, I mean, to avoid those punches from Floyd. I mean, that fast jab, I mean, the straight right hand. I mean, I just think he's going to walk into a lot of problems with that.
Listen, can we move on? I want to talk a little bit about Sugar Shane Mosley and Saul Canelo Alvarez. I would like to hear your take about that. I mean, is Saul getting Shane? I mean, we've kind of seen Shane. He's kind of been falling off the charts. His age is really getting up there. But he's talked about that there was been injuries, his back problems, there was disc problems, you know. He was injured in basketball, snowboarding, and he's never been 100 in training camp. And now he's talking he is 100. How much should we really buy into that, Joe?
Well, it's just to sell the fight, not for a date. I just think that Shane Mosley, he is already about to hang up the gloves. And, yeah, in my opinion, I love the boxing. As a boxing fan myself, I love the sport as it is. The sport itself is a beautiful sport. The business is what I don't like on the boxing world.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, they put it together, and then they set the plan, and we do our work. But I just think that Mayweather, sad to say, but I just think he's catching in, and he is selling his game to a young fighter that sells the business, has a lot of fans, and eventually in Mexico they love him. I don't think, I mean, I honestly think that if Shane Mosley would really want to beat Canelo, he can beat him. I don't care if he's 39, 40 years old. I mean, he can beat him because he has the skill, I mean, the potential to do it. But I just don't see it. I don't see Shane Mosley winning the fight due to the business part of the sport.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I called
you know, because the last couple of Canelo fights, stoppage, like the Gomez stoppage and the Cintron stoppage, I thought were a little faster than they needed to be. And that there were spots and kind of things that were developing, particularly the Cintron fight, I thought, they're starting to exchange, and he's rocking Cintron, but a lot of people hit Cintron. You got to take him out the way Margarito did to beat this guy, and or make him jump out the ring the way, you know, he did with Williams. But this fight, I've called the early stoppage along the ropes. Like, we're going to have the same argument that Mosley shouldn't have been stopped at that moment. It seems like they're pushing that storyline, and it is. I agree with you. It's just the business end of this. You know, it's almost like the summer blockbuster that really isn't that good, but they spend a lot of money promoting it and making it, and so they hope you buy it.
I mean, honestly, I would not pay to see the fight. I wouldn't pay to see the fight, Canelo and Mosley. I mean, I'll watch the Cotto Mayweather because, I mean, I see Mayweather. Mayweather is an entertainer, and Mayweather is a fighter that, I mean, he sells his fight by doing all this talking and stuff. But honestly, the Canelo and Shane Mosley fight, I would not watch. I would not pay to watch it. It's sad to say, and I know that maybe an article, somebody's going to criticize me for it, but this is the way it is. Alfonso Gomez was beating Canelo Alvarez. Canelo Alvarez catches Alfonso Gomez with one shot. He goes down, comes up. He was in good condition to keep fighting, and they stop it. Why? Because in the long run, I mean, they in trouble in the early rounds. What if he kept putting it to him in the later rounds? So they just decided, okay, it's over. But I think Alfonso Gomez was doing what he had to do against Canelo, and he was winning the fight up to that knockdown. And the referee, I think he just did an early stoppage.
Are you suggesting? Do you think there's a possibility they might do that with Shane if Shane gets the kid in trouble, he escapes from it and gets Shane in a little bit of trouble that they could stop in and step in and stop it? Do you think that could happen, Joel?
I think so. I think, you know, honestly, I think that in this fight, due to the fact that Shane Mosley's age, I mean, he's a little older, the referee is gonna take advantage of, oh, you know what, I'm going to stop it as soon as I see an opportunity. That's the way I see it. Why?
to give Canelo the victory, because he is a young fighter that is he's in his prime, and he is right now a superstar, especially in Mexico. I mean, if you're a superstar in Mexico, they're gonna take care of you, and that's the way I see it.
Yeah, and you know what? It even makes it makes him even a bigger draw that he's, you know, if he stops Shane Mosley, regardless of how they stop it, they can always sell it like the first man to stop the guy that dominated all the Mexicans, you know? Wow.
Of course. That's like going back to what I told you.
Right.
It's a business, and that's what I see for that fight. I see Canelo Alvarez becoming a superstar after beating a fighter that has never been stopped, and they just want to give it to him. You know, they're holding a present to this time to give it to him.
Wow. Yeah. God. You know, man, I love having you on. I mean, you're one of the most honest trainers that come on leaving the ring, and you always leave us wanting to keep you on. I mean, I think we could keep you on for 3 hours here, you know? But, you know,
before I let you go,
Joel, you got a lot of fighters under your stable. I mean, you're going to be all over the place. You're coming back over here to the Valley, to Central Valley for Escobedo, right?
Yes, tomorrow after I train Timothy Bradley, after I'm done with his training, I'm gonna stay away for one day. I gotta go to Las Vegas. I got Omar Figueroa fighting Saturday night on that card, and then I come back. But I got, you know, like I said, you know, there's no way that as a trainer, I mean, I would love to tell you, you know what, I'm doing it. I'm the man. I'm the one doing this, but no, there's no such thing. One trainer cannot do everything himself.
Right.
I mean, it's just that some trainers don't give the other part of the team some credit, but you know what? I have a great team. My brother Antonio, my brother Julio, and then I got my conditioning trainer. He's also part of my cutman team. He's Savar Rosas. I mean, they're always 100% because they're under my command. They do as I say and then how I say. So yesterday, Sabah flew in to Vegas with Omar Figueroa. Figueroa is already on weight. Sabah is calling me every hour, like, hey, he's good. He's already a pound over. He's eating, and he told me what he's eating. I mean, we follow a procedure, and that's why when I say, you know what, this kid is going to be a world champion. I mean, okay, they always say, oh, Joel Diaz, I mean, the trainer. No, but Joel Diaz, the trainer, has a team behind him that deserves that credit as well. And, yes, I come back Sunday night. I come back Sunday after the fight with Omar. And then next weekend, I'll send my brother Antonio to Sacramento Wednesday, and I will be there for the fight. And what I do is I prepare my fighters. I prepare them. They're good to go. They're ready to fight. All they have to do is just be at the venue, be at the place with just a couple pounds over and just, 2 days before, worth 2 pounds, and we're ready to fight. I arrive at the place, and I do my job, which is guide them and wrap their hands and win.
That's, man, busy, busy, busy schedule, and we pray for it, brother. I mean, you know, wish you all the best. I know, man. I'm telling you, we got to put some cameras around Joel Diaz and his whole family. I mean, it's a story to be told. Joel, thank you again, brother, for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring.
No problem. It's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure you guys giving me some time. And, you know, anytime, just let me know. I'm just, you know, good thing at this time I'm closing the gym because I work for two gyms, you know. I was just giving another boxing. It's a brand new state-of-the-art, huge gym, fully equipped, in this other town, like 15 minutes south from Indio, California. I train Timothy, Omar, and Vicente in the morning in Indio, and then after I'm done with them at 3 o'clock, I drive to this other town, it's Mecca. So I come over here and I finish my day over here with new prospects. It's going to be a long career for me because I got new kids over here. There are future world champions as well.
Man. Well, kudos, brother. Kudos, because we need guys like you in the business that are in it for the sport, not in it for the perks and the fruits of it. You know, I mean, we all want to see guys like you get that money end, but it's always good to hear that somebody truly loves the sport, and that's the only way we keep the sport alive is having guys like yourself, trainers like you, that spread themselves all over the place and not just work with the big names, but work with all the names, all the people that are willing to lace up their gloves.
Well, you know, like I said on the last interview, I respect every fighter in the world. Every fighter that puts on a pair of gloves and gets in the ring, they deserve my respects because they work really hard. They work really hard. If it's to make $100 or if it's to make $100,000, they deserve the same respect and the same credit because at the end of the day, they're fighting for their families and they're fighting for themselves and their futures. And it's a tough business. It's a tough business. It's a tough sport. It's a short term career, but you know we are trying to do the try to get the best out of it in that short period of time, and as well as trainers, you know. Pretty soon, you know, there's always the eras of the trainers. There's the eras of the fighters, you know. Years ago, Angelo Dundee, and then here comes Emmanuel Stewart, and now you see the new era. You got Robert Garcia, you got myself, you know, you got all kinds of new up-and-coming trainers that are getting building a name for themselves. And you know what? We all work hard. We all work hard, and we all deserve you know, some respect, you know, because we spend hours and hours and hours in the gym passing out our knowledge, our time, and, you know, and just dedicating it to kids in the world to become something, and that is become world champions for their own futures.
Absolutely. Absolutely, brother. Well, just keep up the good work, and to let you know, when you feel like you're not appreciated, just remember that here, the listeners and ourselves here on Leave the Ring, you're much appreciated. We thank you for all the work that you put in.
Well, thank you very much to everybody, and really, I really appreciate you guys' call, and my doors are always open for you guys. If there's anything I can do for you guys, always count on me. Just give me a call. I'm there. If I don't answer the call, leave me a message, and I will definitely return your call as soon as I get the message.
Absolutely, brother. You take care. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Well, there you go. Duell Diaz, the head trainer of Timothy Bradley, he's got a big fight coming up for himself against Manny Pacquiao, giving us his take and his breakdown. Man, that guy, you talk about a workaholic, huh, Gabe? We thought we were bad. But, let's see, I think my co-host, either he fell off. No, he's still on the line. Gabe, are you there, brother? Or are you sleepy now? Or did the genius get to you? Fight
for the
stalker,
but over my loss of my headphones. This is horrible. My iPhone is about to burn my head off. It's not really meant to do three-hour radio shows. So, it'll take a caller. I can pull my head off.
I know. I know. That's why I got to have my headset. I just can't do it like that anymore, you know?
Right.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Definitely can call in and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Myself, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. And you have to get through the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We're on every Thursday night because I do get a lot of folks that say, hey, what time do you guys come on? Because I always catch the archive. Thursday night, every Thursday night at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Remember, we're a three-hour boxing radio show. Monday night, though, we do have an all-Spanish radio show, our sister station, Noche de Boxeo. If you are all speaking Spanish and you want to tune in to something that's all en todo español, pero todo me... todo boxeo, you tune in to Noche de Boxeo, man. That is the Spanish side, the Spanish version of Leave It in the Ring. Let's pass in some fight fans who want to talk about past weekend fights or upcoming weekend fights. Not a problem. We can do it all here on Leave It in the Ring. That's why we have the show. 347-215-7598. And when we take in the caller, Gable will be pulling up the boxing schedule, the fight schedule that's going to happen on Friday and Saturday so that we're prepared and ready. And we got the cold ones in the freezer and we got the meat on the grill. So when the fights start, we're not scrambling, trying to get things done. So let's get Rob Regal, who wants to talk Paulie Malignaggi. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Gabe? Not going to talk about Paulie Malignaggi or what, man?
Hey, good fight. He had a good fight, man. I got to admit, you know, I was not – honestly, I wasn't so excited about it. I was like, okay, pay-per-view, streamed it. I was able to watch it, and, hey, he dominated. And, you know, the only thing is with
I was impressed. I watched it live. I was really excited by that fight. I mean, I wasn't looking forward to it, but...
Right.
But
yeah.
Watching it, man, you got to give it up to Paulie. You know, he had a chip on his shoulder. He had a good jab. He had a really good game plan. And of all the people to have to go in another person's country and knock them out to win, would you have ever picked Paulie Malignaggi to be that guy?
No. I think that's the whole surprise there. And when we talk about an upset against, an upset, that was a kind of an upset in terms that, you know, that Paulie's got good boxing skills. You know that Paulie can be elusive. But he was using those boxing skills, but he was using them a little bit different in this fight. And I think that's what kind of homed him in getting that KO. I mean, because he was landing some pretty good shots. You know, he was landing a lot of those good shots.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, he seemed confident. I mean, he was tweeting for in between rounds or whatever. And, you know, I think he's the only one that believed in himself and him and his team. But I'm kind of glad for him he pulled it out. I don't know how his promoter felt about it. But yeah, I mean, hopefully we get to see the best B-plus fighter matchup as far as, especially on the East Coast. Maybe it'll be him versus Zab Zuto finally. You know what I mean? I think it'll be cool little matchup.
You know what? I would like to see that one still. You know, I don't think I'd be one of them that are going to be like, nah, I don't want to see that. I actually would want to see that fight there, you know, two guys from the East Coast. And I think both guys have a great mouthpiece. And it'd be interesting, not just the fight alone, but the press conferences would be fun.
Oh, dude. I mean, him and Jab Judy, I think he even built towards it, maybe. Extend Paulie's run a little bit. He's earned that. Treat him like a champion. Don't just put him out, because I think Zab could probably beat him. Don't just match him so hard. Maybe you go there once. I don't know. You put, like, you know, Kendall Holt, move him up to 147, and he fights Paulie to defend the title. You know, you do something a little regional to kind of bring some fans in. And then you build towards a Zab Judah fight, like, end of next year. You know, it's like the second tier bowl, but still, you know, it's what these guys kind of deserve, and it would be fun, I think, regionally to kind of revive the area and really use the Barclays Center the right way. Do a few fights, you know. Why screw one cow when you can walk down the hill and screw them all?
I think you're right. I think to them it would lead into a bigger payday for them. It would, the anticipation actually I think would be good for both guys. Seeing that Zab he was able to get Paris out of the way, so there's some you know, stock there that you can still buy into. And I like with Paulie Malignaggi. You know, I've never been not a Paulie Malignaggi fan. It was just, you know, you saw that he was getting a little bit older, even when his last fights were put on the pay-per-view Golden Boy undercards. He's always got a good jab. But this one, we did see something a little bit different about it. We did see something that he is hungry. That hunger is back. And I think you're right, Gabriel. I say allow him. Allow him to kind of bank on it. Allow him to parade into having that championship. But I would go still with that Zab Judah. I'd like to see it. And early next year, I think, hey, man, I think it would be enough time to build on it so that it is meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he hasn't had a lot of trouble with his hands like he was early in his career. You know, maybe that and, you know, again, that man strength, you know, putting on heavier weight, and maybe it's finally settling in, you know, where his body's finally getting used to being at that weight, you know, where it's gonna sit in more, and you know he's sitting down on his punches more. I'm just worried about, you know, maybe like Zab, you know, because he's hot and cold. You know, he'll look great one fight, the next fight he'll just totally ruin it, you know. But that'll be cool. But I mean, I just have one more question about because I was down here at Austin for that Javier Fortuna fight. I mean, I was kind of puzzled. I mean, it was a good little knockout, a good win, but it still had me like, okay, was it more of saying of what he is or what Evans wasn't, you know what I mean? And when it happens that quick, I'm like, man, it kind of still, I mean, it was good. He showed a lot of flash in there, but I thought it was going to last longer. I mean, what do y'all think?
Well, anytime anybody knocks out somebody that was supposed to give them rounds, it's always going to leave you that question, you know. Well, how good was Evans, and how good of a chin was it tested? Because this was a guy that wasn't really kind of really put in those deep, deep trenches. Fortuna, is it his fault? Man, I don't think so. But it does fall back into, as though we're very excited about him, there are questions to find out what happens when you get him deeper down the stretch, and what happens when he gets hit with a bigger puncher, or gets in there with a more skillful guy, you know. But I tend to believe Javier is the real deal.
I think it's a bit of both. I just think he got caught by the real deal, you know, and it just happens. And who's to say the fight doesn't go on and Evans doesn't get into the fight and things change?
Right.
You know, so I think it's, you know, but I've liked Fortuna for a while. You know, I've watched him in the gym, and he's in a really nice environment. I'm probably watching the fight right now, and he just, he's got good people around him. Evans does too, but, he, you know, it's, I don't know. I haven't been in the gym where Evans trains. I've been in the gym where Fortuna trains. And so the up-tempo and everything that they're doing, the people that are there from Sergio Martinez on down, he was just dialed in. But I think it's just also, you know, watching it again, and it's just, he caught him, and this happened. So I think we'll find out about Evans. It's going to be how he comes back from the adversity, how he progresses into his next fight, where he goes from here, you know. Fortuna, I still see a lot of flaws, and I like Yandel Evans. I still see a lot of flaws in Fortuna, even in finishing off Evans. It's like, oh, he's open for this, he's open for that.
Right.
Too excited. But he did finish at good range. Which shows that he's got a natural gift for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in answer to your question, you know, it's just, Evans will be back. You know, we'll just see what he's like when he is.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold really quick, okay?
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for calling in.
Chaz Witherspoon obviously didn't get the win. I got to give it up to Seth Mitchell, brother. That kid's got the goods. Got the goods, you know, and you know, some folks were making fun of him because he did get a little bit emotional, you know, and they were like, come on, dude, it's Chaz Witherspoon. But I kind of see that the reason he was getting emotional because it almost slipped through his hands, through his fingers.
Oh, my goodness.
You know?
He was an uppercut and a comeback to the hook away from being knocked out. If Witherspoon had come underneath and brought his head up and boom, just knocked to the side, finished off for the right, we wouldn't be talking about Seth Mitchell right now. But he didn't. And he also... He forgot. I mean, he was getting so good to Chaz, and all this, he was dropping in those right hands off the jab, and he was asserting himself. And he didn't just calm down and do that for the next like 4 or 5 rounds, and you know, maybe stave off, if, you know, keep enough energy to stave off whatever attack Mitchell was going to have, because you know, dude wasn't after that first round, Mitchell was going to come out hard. He was going to try to reestablish himself. He just had to kind of deal with him. Instead, Witherspoon forgot the jab. Went straight to a phone booth, went to war, instead of just doing what he was doing in the first round, and that was his undoing. It was straight to the body by Mitchell, really nice punches. I think he's going to have problems if he fought like a Klitschko, or even some of the more established, like Hellenius or something. Even Chisora, I think, might give him trouble. But you know what? He's undefeated, and he's making it through each test, so I can't say, well, if this guy fought him, he'd beat him, because I haven't seen it yet. I like Seth Mitchell, dude. I felt bad for Witherspoon, though, because he fought the exact wrong fight, which we said he should do.
Exactly.
But
the thing is, you make a great point, and that point is that Chaz got comfortable. He got overexcited with the dating and decided to move her in right away after the third date, you know?
Oh, God, yeah.
And that's what happened. He found out all the other things that come along in living with somebody, you know? Smelling the dragon breath, finding out the attitude during that time of month, finding out you can't go out with the boys. And Seth Mitchell shut him down, made sure he closed the doors on that poor guy, and took him out of there in fashion that leaves you to say, hey, I want to see a little bit more. But he was vulnerable. He did show that he can be hit. He can be hurt. He can be hurt with a good punch. Chaz Witherspoon's not the he's not a world beater. But he, when you catch somebody in the heavyweight division, on point, on the right button, he can make the guy buckle. Seth Mitchell, I don't want to hear about the Klitschkos. I don't want to hear about that. I still say this is a prospect. And the way Golden Boy is building him up, it's and each test, to me, each test has been, a toe in the water. Don't put the whole foot all the way down to the knee.
Heyman. He's an Al Heyman fighter.
That's right.
So that's, I don't know... I mean, right now, the lines are blurry. There's a lot of Heyman fighters running through Golden Boy. I still keep getting told they don't have contracts with these guys.
Right.
I don't know if that's true, but but you know, I always tend to think that the Heyman fighters are more, you know, the opponents kind of go through that. But you're right. I mean, there was a systematic. It was a pinpoint little right hand that Witherspoon was dropping. It was nice. It was almost like a little rear right hook, just right over the top every time Mitchell dipped down to try to block it. There's certain things that Mitchell does that he'll never do, that he doesn't do, rather, that he'll never be able to do, in my opinion. They're just boxer reflexes from boxing when you were 5 to 7 years old,
right,
and above. And he'll just never have them. And I recognize some of them. There's these little things that your body naturally wants to do. I push people away. Like Amir Khan does that, which I think is weird because he's had so many fights, amateur and pro. But there's certain little movements that just won't ever go away if you've got them, I think. And Mitchell's got a few of them that are just – he's just not meant to kind of roll with punches. I think he's going to have some trouble. But, you know, he could, with this adversity, just grow and get better and get better. He seems to get better every fight. In this fight, he showed us a whole new dimension. He's got heart, tenacity. He didn't go down. You know, he fought through it. That's awesome. You know, that's what you want to find out about yourself. And that was
as
fair to Witherspoon as you could get, other than probably the two more you fight for the little Hunter. You know, and he'd be pushing to really take out and finish out with Seth. But I still think he'll be back, to be honest, Witherspoon, no matter how it went down.
I think so,
yeah,
too. You know, I still think there's fights out there that are winnable for him. He can obviously get himself back onto that ladder of getting into the bigger fights. I keep repeating myself with this. The Klitschkos, to me, are not going to be around for very long. And when that happens, because they're the most dominant, they're the Floyd Mayweathers of the heavyweight division. As soon as they retire, which I can see it in maybe 2 to 3 years, it's going to let the smaller heavyweights be able to, get their shot of getting a world heavyweight title. Now, we don't like it when it's vacant. We've never have throughout history, because it still leaves that, well, could have been beat the undisputed champion. But I think that's what's going to end up. That's what's going to be the trend of what's going to happen with that heavyweight, with the heavyweight division. You know, you want to go with the fight schedule, Gabriel?
Oh, I'm ready with my schedule.
We haven't even talked about the Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson. You know,
so exciting. I almost forgot.
You know, God. You know, Chad Dawson, I give it to him. It's really hard. It's really hard to beat a Bernard Hopkins. The old man is just tricky. He's still able to get away from, you know, shots. And but I thought it was a shutout. I thought Chad did enough. I thought he was doing it. I thought he was controlling it. I thought he was landing the bigger and telling punches when they did land. You know, I was with, you know, friends and family watching the fight, and they kind of just drifted away. You know, they were like, this is a boring fight. I think all of us knew that it was not going to be – it was definitely not going to be a Casillas type of outing. It wasn't going to be a back-and-forth war. It was going to be more more figuring out technique, you know. But I got to say,
you know, my patience felt like it was in a Katsuda's fight, you know.
Right.
It was definitely losing and getting its ass kicked. It was just,
from Mitchell, you know, and then going to that fight, the high was like, okay, now I'm ready for the main event. Let's see this happen. Let's see Chad go for the knockout. And then you're like, you're still waiting on the fourth round. It's going to happen. It's got to happen. You know, it's got to happen.
He hurt him in the eighth. Chad hurt him in the eighth along the ropes. With a right hook. And you could see his legs buckle. I was like, oh, that was my prediction. It was like, you know, the ninth on the ropes.
And we lost Gabriel here. Hopefully he'll call right back in and stuff. Fight fans, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya. Got to get through the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chan. Be sure to pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine with Issa Shea Smith on the front cover, who just put it out on Twitter that he didn't make weight, and he apologizes. It's never happened in his career, but he's fighting on Friday night. So we're going to get to that schedule as soon as Gable gets, and Gable's back on. So let's jump on that fight schedule. I think, you know, the whole Chad Dawson, we kind of just knew where it was going to go.
It was so bad it actually knocked my phone out. Good job by Chad. He got through it. He got cut. He stayed poised. They fought the plan. You know, it's a win this one. You know, look good in the next one kind of affair. I'd like to see him in with Tavares Cloud or a Pascal rematch, the fight of his own. You know, Andre Ward, I don't know if it's a fun fight, but if anybody I think could physically manhandle and stay with in terms of skills and speed, athleticism, it would be, you know, Andre Ward versus Chad Dawson would be an interesting fight. I don't know if it'd be exciting, but it would be interesting. And here we are, May 4th, Friday, 2012, at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Fox Español. Daniel Ponce de León, 42-4, versus Eduardo Lascano, 24-2. This is in support. We've got, Ishae Smith versus I.E. Bruce. Ishae just missed weight. Sorry. 22-5 versus 21-6. At the Palais de Sport in I don't speak French, so I'm not even going to try. The Marcel Cerdan Arena, for those of you that don't speak French, in Paris, France. Hassan Njikam, 26-0, versus Max Bursak, 24-0-1. And moving right along to Saturday for the big fights, May 5th, Saturday 2012, at the MGM Grand Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. HBO pay-per-view, we have Floyd Money Mayweather Jr., 42-0 versus Miguel Angel Cotto, 37-2 for the WBA junior middleweight belt. I'm taking Floyd in 9 along the ropes. He knocks Cotto out, catches him. He's been hitting him with so many rights. He lands a left, then an uppercut, then a left, and then goodnight, Irene. Dave?
I'm going to go with Floyd in the 9th as well. I think that he stops him with a nice right hand, and that's going to be the end of it. If not, you know that the way Cotto likes to dupe that head down with his – and, you know, we talk about all the trainers that have been on the show, and they all have said that the way to nullify the straight right is to keep the hands up high. But I think there is possibly your hands could be up a little too high, and that's in Miguel Cotto's case, and that's why he's been caught with uppercuts. He's got a weird way of kind of duping his head down, and it just spells for – tag me with an uppercut, you know. You remember that back in the old days in school, you know, you put that sticker in the back of somebody, say, kick me. It's kind of with Miguel Cotto putting it on his forehead, uppercut me. So I can see Floyd just stopping him in the 9th round.
It's going to happen. In the undercard, Saul Canelo Alvarez, 39-0-1 versus Shane Mosley, 46-7-1 in the VADA drug-tested bout as opposed to the USADA one that's in the button above the main event. I'm going Shane Mosley loses in like 8 or 9 rounds also, but it's going to be a shaky stoppage. What do you think?
You know, after having a Well Diaz senior on with us, man, and now looking back, I have to agree with them. There is a strong possibility that if Shane looks slightly in trouble, the ref might step in and give Saul that tag of being the first man to stop Shane Mosley. But if not, I see it going all 12 rounds and a unanimous decision for Canelo. I see that Shane can get on that bicycle, and he can make the fight a little bit tougher for Saul to land some of his punches. And it could become a bit of a bore fest, in my opinion. Like I said, there could be a little bit too much sugar involved, that it's too sweet for the teeth and it's going to give you a cavity, where it means that it's going to get you take some Vicodin and you're going to go to sleep.
Shane Mosley in a boring fight? Who would have thunk it? And the third fight in this pay-per-view, no extravaganza, Jesse Vargas, 18-0 versus Steve Forbes. An interesting bout, 35-10. I think it's a good gatekeeper bout. I have no problem with it. You know, it's people say, hey, it's pay-per-view, though. It should be better. Well, don't buy it if you don't like it. Underneath that, Carlos Quintana, 28-3, versus DeAndre Lattimore, 23-3.
I haven't, you know what, haven't put too much thought into it.
That's all you get on the pay-per-views. That's $70 right there for HD. Other than that, I don't have any opinions.
You don't get to see Omar Figueroa. You don't get to see Antonio from Espinoza. You know, come on, add that.
Omar Figueroa, 15-0-1 versus Robbie Cannon, 12-6-2 in a Tales from the Crypt bout.
Also, Antonio Orozco, another interesting prospect, 13-0, versus DeLay Frederick, 8-5-3. And that is the whole card if you're deciding to head out to Vegas. At the Mitchell Hall, Erfurt, Germany, Marco Hook, 34-2, versus Ola Afolabi in a rematch, 19-2-3, for the WBO Cruiserweight belt. I'm going Ola. I think he does a little bit more than what he did last time and actually gets the win this time, although it's hard to beat Marco Hook in Germany. What do you think?
I think that's the whole thing with Marco Hook being in Germany. It's kind of tough to beat him, but I like Ola in this fight a whole lot. I think I'm with you on this one. I think that he's going to bring a little bit something more just because the fact that now he's familiar with what he's faced in the past. I think Ola is one of those guys that it's able to adjust and kind of come back with a better game plan. So I'm going to go with him, but I think they're going to take it from him if he goes 12 rounds.
Yeah, I would agree. It probably will. I mean, although Ola has been on a nice little streak, man, and he's really squirrely. He's hard to hit. He's able to – and Marco Hook, I mean, he's an awkward guy, but he's got a very – I mean, it's like Ponce de Leon before they refined him, you know?
Right.
He's just very – so easy a K-Pan can do it. And Ola is like the technician that wasn't – like a James Toney that didn't have an amateur career. Actually, James didn't have a huge one himself, apparently, but – he's that kind of just natural fighter. You know, that's why I bring him up. And there was a sparring session, the wild card, years ago. I think it was Doug Fisher. And I think Steve may have mentioned it. Where Ola out Tony, James Tony, to the point where he got upset and, like, got out the ring and, like, knocked over the trash can. It was just, like, screaming at Ola. Because Ola was laying on the ropes and making James miss, making him pay.
Right.
He's just a naturally slick dude. And I think he's really coming into his own because he's such a young fighter. You know, he's only got 24 professional fights.
He's the guy, really, honestly, and I don't know if you would agree with me on this, but he's the guy with the skills that didn't have the confidence yet. And I think he now, with that streak,
yeah,
he's got the confidence now of knowing who he is. Because even before, I think he was kind of fighting what personality that he has in the ring. And now he's comfortable with it. Now he's kind of understanding that this is who he has to be. Don't force mm-hmm. another personality. There's no need for a split personality in the ring. Just be who you are because it's been working.
Well, yeah, and you really look at these guys, and, okay, it was 2009 December when they fought the first time, and Ola's fought five times since then. He's won them all. He had a points win, and then he had a fifth-round knockout in a, you know, like a regional title fight. Then he had a brutal knockout of Terry Dunston and won. I mean, he has been on a streak here. I mean, these aren't the best guys in the world, but when it's the guy, you know, he went like eight rounds with a 9-10 guy in his very next fight after beating Terry Dunston, who was 24-3. He does have a tendency to kind of go down to the level of opposition, but then, you know, look at his last fight, and he just beat the hell out of Rudolph. I mean, it was a masterful performance, and he comes right back to take on Hook. I think he's razor sharp right now. You're exactly right. He knows who he is. And I don't know, you look at Hook's streak, and I mean, yeah, okay, he might have beaten Povetkin, he might not have, but, I mean, that's Alexander Povetkin. What has he ever done that you were in a close fight with him? You know, that's pretty, and everybody else, I mean, Lebedev, I thought, beat Marco Hook, Brian Minto, that was a, you know, these are names like Better Kaiser's also-rans. When he's had to step up, he went the distance. And I think the difference between the two guys is Hook is who he is. I don't think he has a naturally great boxing IQ. He's a banger, and he's not much more refined than that. Ola Afolabi is a natural boxer who's figuring himself out and learning how to set up, which is turning out to be very good power. I think the difference will show in this fight. If they don't rob him, it's going to be a clear win for Ola.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely agree.
Underneath that is Alexander Dimitrenko, 32-1, versus Kubrat Pulev, 15-0. Dimitrenko is an interesting guy. I mean, heavyweights took a while to develop. I don't know a lot about Pulev, so I mean, either the kid's real, or Dimitrenko has learned something as he's gotten older. Has learned something from that loss. And then Dustin Dirks, 23-0, versus Thomas Ulrich, 32-6. It's like a kind of a solid card. And then an interesting fight, you know, an old friend of ours or mine. Edmund Gerber, who's, I don't know, 19-0 versus Maurice Harris, 25-15-2. I think this moves somebody into some sort of positions.
in the rankings.
Right.
And then at the Marina Bay Sands in Singapore, Chris John, 46-0-2 versus Soji Kimura, 24-4-2 for the WBA featherweight belt. Underneath that is Dawad Jordan, 28-2 versus Lorenzo Villanueva, 22-0. That's an interesting little fight card there. I don't know.
It is. I actually like this fight card here. You know, I do. Don't know exactly. Putting both those guys, Jordan and John, on there, it just to me kind of because they had fought and it was such a great fight. Is this a way of keeping them both in the eyes of fight fans so that they are going to start raving for the rematch? I don't know. See what's going to happen with these two.
Almost there. At the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut, ESPN2, Demetrius Andrade, 16-0 versus Rudy Cisneros, 12-3 out of Chicago. It's going to be Andrade. He's going to win. Richard Gingras will be in the fourth. 11-2 versus Born God Washington, 3-10.
Yeah.
I want to see that. In Tijuana, Mexico, Rafael Marquez, 40-7 versus Kenichi Yamaguchi, 17-2-2. Jackie Nava, 26-4-3 versus Diana Ayala, 12-6-3. At the King's Hall, Belfast, last bout. Northern Ireland, Paul McCloskey, 23-1 versus DeMarcus Chop Chop Corley. You want to talk about a road warrior, 38-19-1. That's a fight I want to see.
You know,
and
I was going to say that. Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, our Saturday is going to be pretty packed. There's a lot of stuff out there happening.
God.
And
don't call me on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Don't call me on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, I'm busy. What do
yeah.
you think? I'm working. Watching lots of violence.
Lots of violence.
I'm excited, dude. That was a gauntlet. That wasn't a round table. All those guests tonight.
Oh, you're right. It was. It was, you know, and
then we had kind of a creepy crawler try to make his way into the castle. That was bizarre. It was like the Riddler came by, you know, the guy with like the green tights, you know, from the 60s, Frank Gorshin.
The funny thing is when these, you know, your nemesis, I'm like, your nemesis, who is this?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
I don't have any nemesis. You're not a woman. Well.
Well, there you go, man. 3 hours of boxing talk here while leaving the ring with your host, Dave Montoya, and our producer behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Be sure to tune in every Thursday night. If you missed the roundtable to the Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto, you can catch it on our website at livingringradio.com. It streams all over again, I believe, 15, maybe 30 minutes. I'm not really sure. Or you can just download it on iTunes. It's not a big problem. You can catch the archive. I appreciate anybody that tunes in live or calls in. It's much appreciated from myself and Mr. Gable Montoya. Be sure to pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. You know, we put a lot of content in there, a lot of hard work behind everything that we do. And a real quick announcement. We got a new show that we're developing. It's called The Boxing Fix. It's going to be concentrating mostly on the undercards of like the Friday night fights and on the main events on Saturday. It's the boxing. It's for the boxing addicts that need their boxing fix before the main event. So that'll be out on May 13th. Be sure to tune in. It should be a real fun show. I'm excited about it. And make sure you tune in every Thursday night for Leaving the Ring and Monday for Noche de Boxeo. Anyways, you guys have a good weekend. Don't drink and drive. Be safe out there in Las Vegas if you're going. And we'll catch up with you guys next week on Thursday.
Yeah, I still got a bunch of stories coming out. If you haven't caught Mayweather and the new drug testing wave on Max Boxing from Tuesday, check that out. But also got a reprint of our interview we did with Shane Mosley, as well as our interviews with Canelo. So look for those later on this week. Dave, pleasure as always. I will see you at the fights.
Absolutely. Good night, brother.
Peace.
Mm-hmm.